is because we pick up a microphone, start broadcasting, we give in to that childish impulse to attempt to be popular, to attempt to be well-liked. Instead of being like prophets in the Bible who told the people what they needed to know, we instead betrayed the people. We betray the people's trust. And we betray the people's allegiance. That's what we do. I'm going to go ahead and open up the telephone lines now. So it's your opportunity to call in. And that's going to be what we should look for here. The telephone number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933. That's your personal access code to the blackest radio program in existence, the only one of its kind on planet Earth today. The only one that is actually making a difference anywhere, because it's the only one that's actually concerned with making a difference and not with making a ring, or making an audience. You listen to last night's broadcast and you want to call in, this is your time. I am going to inform you that, as always, it is always best to call in early. If you do not call in early, you tend to wait till the end of the broadcast and then be given a couple of minutes to speak. Why come you didn't give me as much as everybody else? Because you waited until the last hour of the broadcast. That's why. So, if you want the greatest amount of time to speak, I suggest you call in early. And then I can give you latitude. If you want to know, the young man yesterday, even though he was erroneous on many things, got to speak for so long, it was because he called in so early. He not only did he have something to say, no matter whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't matter. He beat the rest of you to the punch. And that's the way it works. We believe in social Darwinism. We believe in it. And I'm not afraid of it, because I'm prepared for it. How about you? Go ahead and open up the phone line now. We're going to take a caller from the 412. You're on live with the Black Channel. He's marching home in the snow. Caller from the 412. You're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 412 has been abducted. Not really sure what occurred to him, but he's been taken. I'm doing this tonight because a lot of people with a black man who speaks exactly what it is he feels and exactly what it is he means. And that's problematic. Rick, if you or Incandescent suspect that anybody is in the chat room trolling, what you need to do is you need to inform them that if you've got questions that are banal, give them the number to give me a call. And let me tell you all right now, if either Rick or Incandescent instruct you to give us a call or be quiet, you better give us a call or they will make sure you're quiet. So in case you were wondering who gave him that authority, the black authority gave him that authority. You're quite welcome to do that. You're quite welcome to ask questions, but you cannot ask them in the chat room. You have to call in and ask them directly. So if you've got any questions for TBA or anybody else for that matter, if you don't ask questions of people random, you got a question? I gave you a telephone number to call. We're not going to do the online garbage where you stood up here and snipe at each other and put up a post and see, I got one in. No, you'll just get your dumb ass banned. That's what happened. This will be your opportunity to call in. We're not going to play the chat room game. We're not, and I hold you to that. Caller from the 240, you're on live with the Black Panel.
Hello, TBA. This is Gwendolyn calling from Fort Meade, Maryland.
Hello, Gwendolyn. What's on your mind, Black woman?
Hi, I'm really happy to speak with you. I've been listening to your broadcast for a while now and everything I can find online. And I'm just so happy with everything that you're saying. I can't find anything that I can even begin to challenge. And I feel like you're really speaking, you know, for all of us. Just wish more people would listen in. But the topic today, I guess, was maybe being an angry Black person. And I just feel like that everything you're saying, especially tonight, you know, applies to me. And I just I feel angry a lot of times with myself. I'm angry at a lot of Black people for not understanding what I'm talking about. I see myself dropping friends very quickly, and people that I thought were my friends or people that I, you know, thought cared about me. I find myself in situations where I'm defending them and, you know, pointing out things, and they, you know, they'll sit and laugh, or sometimes they'll let you defend them, and you just don't feel like people have your back, you know, and you point out things that are going on around them, and they'll kind of let you sometimes maybe even be the pit bull or something, and, you know, but not really have your back, you know, and so I think I have a lot of anger about that with my Black friends especially. I try to keep myself around Black people, even though I did not grow up mostly around Black people. I grew up a military brat, and so I've always had access to having different friends, but I've always tried to place myself with my brothers and sisters, and I just find that sometimes it feels like maybe it hurts more than it helps, you know? So I have a lot of anger in dealing with that.
Okay, you said before that you've had to drop a lot of friends. What is it exactly that you're doing that's putting you into a position where you're like, okay, I can't hang with these people anymore?
Things like calling out the treatment, why we're being treated in certain ways. Like, I know personally one thing that really sticks out to me when you ask that question is even being in high school and being mistreated by a lot of the Black men, a lot of the cool, you know, football players, basketball players, and a lot of the guys, I know they would call a lot of the African girls or dark-skinned girls or maybe even brown girls like me, they would, you know, treat us differently than maybe other girls of different races. And that really is probably the number one thing that comes to my mind. But the brown girls and the Black girls would still swarm them, and they would accept that mistreatment, and I just couldn't do it. And it took me a long time to maybe understand why they were doing it. I just wasn't raised in a family where we did that. I always had Black, you know, people on my walls, and queens and princesses and pharaohs on my walls. So I've never had a color issue or a light, dark type of issue. And I've never really gone through that being a brown skin girl. I was kind of in between. But that's one thing that sticks out to me. But I've had to cut a lot of those women off, and those men especially, who play that kind of colorism game. But I don't find that people join in with me and understanding. Eventually I thought maybe they understand as an adult. And just, you know, pointing out things that happen that are maybe, you know, racist things, or, you know, this white bartender is giving us bad treatment, so let's just get up and leave. And people will continue to be mistreated, and I have to separate myself because I'm not trying to cause a scene, or, you know, there have been times where I have confronted people about that, but, you know, I don't want to be in those positions or giving these people my money. You know, I don't go to the Chinese stores. I don't go to Korean beauty places. I go out of my way to give to my community. And I have a lot of friends who don't care. You know, they won't drive the extra mile to go to the African shop. They won't, you know, do the extra things. And I just feel like, well, if you don't have Black people's back, how can you have my back? You know, and it angers me, and it stresses me a lot. I think about it a lot because I feel like I have somebody's back first because they are Black. I feel like you're back first, you know, and I don't feel like I get the same. I feel like we're against ourselves, and I feel like I really get to a point where I can't trust, you know, a lot of my black friends and family, you know, and
well,
it angers me.
Well, explain something to you here, okay? If you have somebody that you can't trust, that's not a friend.
Yes.
If you can't trust them, that's not a friend. Things will kill you. I'm referring to cigarettes.
Yes. I'm sorry, you said cigarettes will kill you?
Yes, cigarettes will kill you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I understand.
Okay, you understand? Okay. I just want to be...
Yes.
Okay. We're not going to get any deeper than that, but yeah, that's what called me the authority. Those things kill you. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Said before about people saying that you're angry, and black women in particular have to be killed about that, almost as much black men. What is it that they say you're angry about?
Well, TBA, the what I get the most, I think, has to do with just maybe my attitude towards white supremacy, racism, and really inside of that, more of the colorism things and the, I guess, maybe more interracial things and interracial dating. I'm very much pro-black family, and I don't even feel like I'm pro-black, and I don't even like to have to say that I'm pro-black. I feel like no one else has to explain why they want to marry a Korean woman or a Korean man. And I feel like black people are the only people who, you know, white black women especially are the only people who have to kind of explain the strength of a black family. And I feel like a lot of people think that I'm bitter or jealous of someone else, or that I wish I was a white woman, or, you know, I can't stand to see a black man with a white woman. And that's just not the case, you know. I enjoy seeing black families, and my family, I'm married, no children yet, but that's something that I believe is power and strength and beauty. And I just, a lot of people say that I'm angry about a lot of it, and I'm fine, because you did a broadcast about it maybe a week ago, and you were speaking, touching on that, and I just feel like it's not about trying to control who someone dates or who someone likes. But I feel like you said, a lot of black men are, they're kind of trying to make it, well, if you don't do this or you don't act like this and stuff, see, I'm going to go over here to this white woman. And I feel like, why would you go, if you knew anything about what's going on, or if you liked yourself or cared about yourself or anything, and if you knew anything about racism, why would you run there? Why is that what you're trying to hurt me with? And I,
well, it's not about, you know anything about it. It's not about if you know anything about racism. It's about if you care. Because the same guys doing that are very, very knowledgeable about racism. They're just letting you know that, I mean, everybody fakes the funk until they get a chance to do it. Everybody is pro-black until white society opens its arms to them. And then all of a sudden, they don't care about it anymore. About this pro-black thing, okay? You don't hear me use that term very often. I don't use that term in daily commerce with myself or with my friends or family, anybody that I know personally. I use that term. I use that term on the internet when dealing with other people. I use that term when communicating to other people. I do not use that term with myself. I use it because for me, there is no such thing as pro-black. It's just black. For me, it's not pro-black. You never heard anybody say I'm pro-Irish. He's just Irish.
Yeah.
You never say I'm pro-Jewish. He's just Jewish. When they have the St. Patrick's Day parade and all the Irish people go out there, or people say they're Irish because a bunch of black folk out there too, but all right, may or another. But they have the St. Patrick's Day parade. You everybody say, look at all these angry Irish people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're pro-Irish. Do you know how many fundraisers for the Irish Republican Army get held on St. Patrick's Day? Negroes to open up a coffee shop on Martin Luther King's birthday. These guys can get guns for St. Patrick's Day. And my point is that nobody ever accuses them of being angry for being Irish. Nobody ever says that. black people, though.
Exactly.
Somehow we are angry for being black and for not being afraid to acknowledge what we are. That makes you angry when you're black, but if you were anything other than black, it'd be just fine. And what I'm saying is that that's one of those things that people use to intimidate you. The problem, sister, is that they realize you, that they realize that people are, they realize your power is growing when you do that.
Yes, yes.
And they
yes,
are afraid
and,
of that. That scares them.
Yes.
Do you know how many people Gwen would be terrified of if Gwen had real power? Do you know how many people would, how that terrifies people about that? Gwen, her job may be intimidating, but she's not scary just yet. Well, what would make Gwen scary? Real power. If she actually had real power, that would make her scary. And that's what they look at.
Yes.
You know how,
yes,
you know how that affects people. Have you ever really thought about that?
You know, I've kind of dreamed a little bit and kind of never really put it like that. But I would think, you know, if I had control, I've ran through scenarios like maybe if I was, you know, the president or the queen somewhere, or if I even had a powerful business, what I could do. But, you know, kind of touching on that is I feel like when people do stand up, maybe even people in the media stand up and say something, you know, like Rob Parker did about RG3. I feel like when people say something, they're quickly cut down and black people don't have their backs, you know? And I feel like why would someone want to be lose their powerful position or a position where they're even doing something and even stand up for black people, because we don't stand up for them, or at least I feel like we don't stand up for them when they need our support, when they're standing up for us, you know? But I definitely understand what you're saying, and I think it does intimidate a lot of people, and I do feel like we are trying to pull people down when they are powerful, and that's what I felt like I went through a lot in high school and college. If you don't respond to the men, or if you don't follow the flock of women, then all of a sudden you become a bee, you know, and all of a sudden you're this nasty, terrible person, and everything that comes behind it. You know, it's like if you don't follow, we're going to harass you until you do. We're going to tear you down for being different or daring to be by yourself and not follow the clique, you know. And I've never been a cliquey person, you know, and I feel like people really do try to intimidate you and scare you into not being strong and not standing on your morals and your values. You know, and I really understand what you're saying, and it's very true. I think people try to break down up that power structure as soon as they see someone capable of doing something different, even though you're trying to do it in their benefit. And I think that's where the anger comes from, because it's like all my life people called me white girl, you know, from the way I speak and the way I, you know, behave, and they call me white girl, and I just think in my mind, I'm black, you know, I'm black. I've been only into my history and only supporting black men, only supporting black people, and not the Rainbow Coalition. And it's just hard, you know. And when you're putting all this effort into the positive things and the wonderful things about being a black woman, and for some reason other people don't embrace that, you would think that other people would come to you and say, wow, this is a positive. Listen to her knowledge. Listen to what she knows. And you would think they would circle around you and want to hear, but they don't, you know. But if you start, you know, shaking your butt, you know, or talking about Beyonce and you love Beyonce, and if you start doing that, people will gather around. They'll love you. You'll be the life of the crowd, you know. And it's really hard. The negativity to deal with is very hard, you know. It's very hard to deal with as a black woman. It's extremely difficult to deal with, you know. It's very,
your husband black,
very hard. Yes, sir.
Do you have any children?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, what I will say is that it doesn't get easier, but it does get better, because I do believe that we are changing. We're changing things now. We're turning a corner, and we really are changing things. The 21st century is not going to be like 20th century for some of us. For a lot of people, it's going to look just like the beginning of the 20th century. And for them, I guess they got it coming. But if you've been looking for black people who get it, if you've been looking for black people who are uncompromising and unwavering and not saying one thing one day and then switching to something else the next day, if you're looking for black people who are on your side, you've found kindred souls.
Yes.
And I would like to formally welcome you to the Black Channel.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
I'll have the last word, sister.
Yes, well, my last word would have to be is thank you very much. I'm really doing my best to spread the word, and I'm trying to turn some people on to you. The only people that I can say have really been interested are my two younger brothers, and they love you, especially your business mind. They really like that, and they'll call in soon, you know, probably when you're on that topic. And I just want to let black people everywhere, let them know that there are people out here who understand what's going on. They see it. We love you, and we need to get together, stick together, and make things better for all of us, and we can do it. So black first.
Black first, sister. Thank you very much for joining us. Telephone lines are now open here. Let's see if we can open up a few more phone lines here. Caller from the 313, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Jason?
Yes, you're on live. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Wilbert. I'm calling from Detroit. How are you doing this evening?
Wilbert in Detroit, what's on your mind, black man?
I just want to talk about what are your feelings or attitude toward things, getting things done. I think it's a real simple concept that people just, I feel, are just missing it, that the way you think about things can determine how you respond to things and do things in your life, you know, as far as just like with wealth. I think people think it's a get-rich way of doing things, and that wealth, really building real wealth, is real slow and steady. Real boring, like planting a seed and you just keep watering it and watering and watch it grow, like how your show has, like you said, you've been doing this for about 5 years and now you're starting to see it's starting to grow and people starting to get it. So I just feel people just, they make things too complicated when a lot of things are just simple.
What it is that, let's just be honest, most black people have not been raised in a successful black family. They have seen their dad have a family, go to work every day, and become CEO. They haven't seen that. They haven't seen their mom stay at home, raise her kids, or go to work, whichever, and become successful at what she does. They have not seen an intact, successful black family. They have not seen dad come home from work exasperated, frustrated, upset with nonsense and the racism and say, you know what, I'm going to do my own thing. And they haven't seen him build a successful business or even attempt to from the ground up. They haven't seen that. And because they have seen that, they don't have a concept of it. That's why they're comfortable at the bottom, comfortable with an entry-level position, comfortable with a middle management position, comfortable with public assistance. They're comfortable at the bottom because they've never seen anybody get to the top before. So the things that you and I are talking about, everybody has basic math, or at least they're supposed
right.
to.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
A lot of folks have algebra, or at least that's the first higher math they introduce you to is algebra. But not very many people have trig and calculus. Very few people have that. We are here discussing trigonometry and calculus. And that's why they're saying, what in the hell? Man, 2 + 2 = 4. That's all I know. And then they go sit down. And that's why they're so easily bought. That is what dumbing down a population does. It makes them easy to control because they don't know, and because they don't know, have no concept outside of that, makes them easy to control, easy to maneuver, incredibly easy to dominate, and to anticipate whatever they're going to do in the future. They can't outsmart you. They can't outmaneuver you. You're always going to be five steps ahead of them, always. And directions that they think of, even after long periods of contemplation, you already anticipated a strategy for countering it. So most people don't even think in this direction. The first time that most of my listeners heard about Black empowerment was right here. Some of them might have heard of Claude Anderson, but most of them, I mean, look, how many people have called in and thought they knew what empowerment was and didn't actually understand? How many people has that happened with? They thought, yeah, I know what empowerment is. I know what wealth is. I know what power is. And then they called in and realized, I had no idea. You have to understand, I started doing this 5 years ago, but it was not until I sat down at the feet of the prophet, Claude Anderson, and listened to him that I realized what I was wrong about. And you see, I thought that I had it. I thought I had it all. And I realized that, wait a minute, no, there is another dimension to this that even I wasn't aware of. What do you own? What do you control? And what are you passed down? Do you know how many Black men can't answer any of those three questions? Forget all three of them. They can't answer one of those questions in the affirmative. What do you own? What do you control? What are you passing down? They can't answer you positively on any of those counts. Do you know how devastating that is? How do you build a society and you haven't even finished building a life yet?
You don't. If you don't, like you said, if you're not even aware that what is successful, what is Black economic empowerment, you just don't get it. I mean, you just get slaughtered. Like you said, we've been getting slaughtered the whole time because we've been looking at the wrong thing. Like I said, it's funny because I had this conversation. I'm a 70s baby. So my parents, they basically were able to retire from a job of 30 years. So in their mind, thought they were successful. Then I said, Dad, you can't pass a job to me. Then then his light bulb went off. You know, he thought by going to work, providing for us, that's the level of success. I said, but you didn't leave me nothing. So, you know, it kind of hit home with them. But, you know, I'm in my 40s, and I'm thinking, like, you know what, I'm not even leaving my kids something. So, you know, I'm making good money, but I can't pass this job on to my family. So now I'm making steps in, okay, I need to leave something for my kids. So, like you said, resources getting tight now. Like you said, everyone's squatting up. So and we need to, like you said, we got to leave stuff for our kids. So, like you said, businesses for they can pass on to their kids for generational wealth.
But we have to impose on Black men if that's their responsibility. Because most Black men do not feel any responsibility to their family or even their kids whatsoever. And that's treason. A man is responsible for his children. He's responsible for his family. That's treason when you sit up here and you've lived your life and passed nothing. You brought children into this world, but you've prepared nothing for them. That's except their meals to get up in the morning. That's treason. That is high treason. That's high crime against your children. And I'm calling it what it is.
Yep. And I was doing the same thing, high treason. And I think, like you said, we pass these bad habits or thoughts or culture on to the next generation. But I'm glad to see that we're starting to make that change for like-minded people like yourself and I. Like, because I just hope we ain't at the end. Like you said, ain't too late.
No, but we're not at the end. This is not the end. This is just the beginning. I'll let you have the last word.
Well, Black First, brother, keep doing what you do. Hey, you're starting to make a difference, and I'm with you 100%.
Thank you very much for joining us, Brother Black First, as always. Caller from the 412 and the other numbers. Everybody just hold on the line here. I know you've been holding for a while, but we have a special guest on the line here right now. This is our caller from 347. Sounds like they're having a shootout over there.
Hello?
Yes, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Oh, okay. It's a little bit loud. Yeah, I'm going to go to a little quieter place for a second. I was listening in, and I was just waiting to relocate. Okay, yes. On the air, correct?
Yes, brother. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, my name is Fabian. I'm calling from Manhattan right now. I'm in Chinatown, but I'm from Brooklyn.
You had some questions to ask me.
Well, I don't have any questions to ask. I was listening to the broadcast at the moment when I was posting. I was just trying to figure out what was the tempo, what was going on. I was a bit unsure about that, but I'm listening in, hearing some good things. I'm disagreeing with some things, but this is what I do.
And what are you disagreeing with?
What did I disagree with? Oh, some things, small things, small things. But I think there was a caller on a female. There was a female on earlier, and I think she was for pro-black relationships or marriages only, but, you know, she didn't mind per se, but, you know, I disagree with that. I've been with outside of my race in relationships. I've seen bad looks from my own race because of it, but I think there's nothing wrong with that. All women are attractive.
Do you consider yourself to be part of the black community?
Of course, of course.
Why do you say that?
Because I am a black person, definitely.
You think that being born a black person makes you part of the black community, so it's just a genetic right that you have simply because you were born?
Okay, you're talking about a community, because also in the community I was born in, definitely born in the black community. So
yes,
I think,
I'll try this one more time, though. You said because I'm a black man. Do you think that simply being born a certain color makes you part of that community?
No, not at all. I'm going to retract that. I'm going to say that me being a black man, born a black man, and living in a black community, I think that fairly answers your question. Understand?
So you say that. No, I want to make sure that we're clear on this.
Because of those reasons, I would say that I'm a part of the black community.
Okay, because you were a black man and you were born in it.
In a black community, raised in a black community.
So you don't think that, do you believe that any of your behavior could disqualify you?
A behavior disqualify you from the black community?
Yes.
Well, a behavior possibly. Yes, I think you could make that judgment. But I don't think it changes you being black, a black person. You're always going to be a black person. Being out of a community because maybe your peers in the community don't accept you, you could be banned, I guess. You know, people can ban you. They don't want to deal with you because maybe you dated outside of your race. You know, but those things shouldn't matter. Those things shouldn't matter. There are other things more important than that.
So you're saying that there are other things more important than the woman sleeping next to you?
No,
this is all very, this is all very interesting. I would like you to educate me on that. How can you separate your identity from the woman sleeping next to you? Why don't you explain that concept to me?
Okay, when I said more important, because before you can deal with the woman that sleeps next to you, that's another thing I think I was disagreeing. And I think I was understanding when I was feeling the vibes. When you guys were talking about how important it is to be in a relationship with a black woman, if you're a black man and stuff like that, I'm going to touch on that. But there are more important things than who a person sleeps with or who a person is involved with. And especially if you're dealing with helping
the black community.
Okay,
come on now. Now, if you ask me a question, I'm going to answer it directly. I'm not going to dance around it, and I'm not going to sit up here and pretend you didn't ask me something.
Okay,
as long as it's germane. I'm asking you directly, explain to me, how do you separate your identity from the woman that you are sleeping next to.
No, no, no. She creates her identity through me. I'm the man. She's the female. So
you believe that you have a masculine primacy over your woman's identity?
Say that again?
So you believe that you have some type of masculine primacy over your woman's identity?
I'm afraid to answer that question because I don't know exactly what you mean by asking that question.
Okay, you
and
just sat here and said that she gains her identity from you because you are the man.
Right. More than I would from her. Exactly, yes. Like, I don't follow after a woman's lead.
Okay. If you are dating a non-black female, doesn't matter what race she is,
okay,
do you still believe that you are part of the black community by engaging in that behavior?
Of course. Of course.
Explain to me how so.
Because me, personally, being a black person, born in the black community, everything that revolves around my thought process is black. Not the woman I'm dealing with, because that doesn't matter to me.
Okay,
but
now,
when I
do
carry
you see
myself
a contradiction
out,
there? Do you see how you just contradicted yourself?
Okay, just...
Did you catch that? Because you just said... Now, everybody, I want you to listen to what you just said.
Uh-huh.
He just said, everything in my thought process.
Right.
Now, brother, contrary to what some books have told you, that woman was not brought down by a stork or magic wand, you to pursue this woman. So if your thought processes were truly pursuing black all the time, how did you end up with a non-black female?
No, that's what I mean. That's why I said with the separation of a female, even
Not separation. I think the word that you're looking for is exception. My thought process is all black, except where women are concerned, I'm equal opportunity.
Right, but I think when you deal with people and personal things in life, right?
My mind is pro-black, but my bed is multicultural.
No, I'm not pro-black. See, when you say pro-black, that's why I thought you said you wasn't pro-black, and I agree with that. I am not pro-black because I think that means a little too much to some people. Like I'm pro-people. I'm pro-people. But what fits me, part of the black community, is my thought process when it comes to black people, I should say.
I'm not understanding you. Can you elaborate
okay.
a little for me?
I love black people because I am a black person. I love them more because I am a black person. Than any other race, I will love my own race more than the other races. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't date another race. That doesn't mean I wouldn't be friends with another race, work with another race. I'm not like that. I think some people who claim to be pro-black think it has to only be about black people. So I'm not in agreement
okay.
with that.
Okay, you started out totally. By saying that you see yourself as a black man as part of the black community. But if you are just pro-people, then how can you sit up here and say I'm a black man as part of the black community? Because you just articulated a secular humanism.
I'm pro people.
So why are you bringing black into your lexicon whatsoever when you just told us that it has no value to you?
Has no value? No. Black people have value to me.
You just said I'm pro people. You can't say I'm pro people, but black still have value. Black gets mixed in and deep value along with everything else. It has to, because
saying
it has no distinction.
Okay. I wanted to get into a meaningful conversation. Talking about whether I think you're just misunderstanding me or misinterpreting what I'm saying. But I love black people because I am a black person. I am a black man.
But how valuable is that to you? You said people put too much value in. You said that people put too much value into it. And what I'm saying is that, well, what you're saying is it has no distinction.
People put too much value in the word pro-black. The
okay,
word. That's why I wouldn't
that?
Use that word. That's why I wouldn't use that word. The
okay,
word
but you've gone beyond that. You've gone beyond just I won't use that word. You've gone to I don't live it either. So let's be very clear here. You've gone past just
because that's
it's
what
not
I'm saying.
Just
because
you're philosophically opposed. You're not living it either.
Because what some people might interpret as pro-black is just dealing with just black people. Some people might not believe that being pro-black. That's why I wanted to make. That's why I made the statement I made. Depending on how you interpret pro-black, if pro-black is all black and only black, I am not for that. But if you call pro-black a person who supports black people being a black person, then I can totally agree with that. Do that person have to only date black people or only have to go to black businesses? I don't agree with that. I don't think that makes you pro-black. And if you're not doing those things or if you are doing those things, they make you one or the other. I don't believe that.
Okay, here's the problem, okay? The problem is when an individual brings their religion into things.
Right.
Now, when somebody asks you straightforward political questions and you respond with ideology, ideals are a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. Ideals are wonderful. We cannot live our lives by our ideals. We can't do that. We have to live what's practical. If somebody tried to initiate what you are espousing right now, which is I can think black and I can live however I want. I can be black when convenient. It applies when I say it applies, and it will apply when it's always most convenient. You got a lot of background noise going on, my brother. A lot of background noise.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'll just separate.
It will apply to me when it is convenient. How in the world can we have a stable and sane black society when there are people saying that I will identify and live and favor blackness when it is convenient for me?
Now, that is a great question that I would love to answer. Now,
I'm not done yet.
Okay.
You can't say that something is a principle. And I'll let you go look up the word principle. You can't say something is a principle if you are not going to stand by it when it is inconvenient, when it's distressing, when it costs you things. You see, wealth is a principle of mine. I am willing to sacrifice for wealth. I'm willing to sacrifice for empowerment. I'm willing to sacrifice for knowledge. And you know it's valuable to me and that I really believe this and that it's really a principle because I am willing to go through hardship for it. I just believe in it when it gives me the rewards. I'm there for when it's costing me a lot. And there are easier things I could be doing. There are easier things I could be getting away with. I go with this. So if you're going to sit up here and say that you identify as black at all, but we have this hodgepodge potpourri going on, and we will not identify or stick with black if it's going to have to be inconvenient for us, then tell me, how can you identify as it at all?
Okay, now, this is how I can identify. This is how I can identify with that exactly, right? Because, before I say that, I'm about results, and I like to get results. And when I go for a mission, I always plan to succeed at the mission I'm going for, right? And in the black community, there was a mission, and I don't think we're nowhere near succeeding at that mission. And the problem, there's a problem, why? Because people overlook small things. Whichever route you go, there may be a small thing that's going to mess everything all up. In this case, the way my mindset is, right, I gave you who I am as a black man living in America. Living in America, I've come to think, and this is how I rationalize with the world here in America. Now, I can identify exactly what you're saying because I am that person who would sacrifice all those things. But I understand my environment. Situations are different here in America than it would be like in Africa. You have Marcus Garvey, who I love. Marcus Garvey, he sat there, tried to tell black men, go to Africa, come back, let's go back, let's do it all in Africa. Leave the white man alone. There, we could have prospered as black people solely. Unfortunately, we're here in America, and because of that, I feel you have to work within the means of America. Now, I'm not saying that people should bend over and do as they're told. But feeling like you're feeling, or would you just describe to me a person who would be pro-black and would sacrifice all these things, I would be willing to do that as well. I'll be on the front line, but not here in America. Not here in America. I would go back to Africa where people look just like me, who need me to be there for them just as well as I need them to be there for me, to be pro-black. And I think that's where we go to get pro-blackness. And then I would never date a white woman. I would never even think about a white woman or Asian woman or any other race. Just black. I'll be pro-black there, just not here in America. Yellow?
Do you really understand what you just said?
Well, maybe you'll enlighten me.
What you're saying is that you'll sell us out the soonest convenience.
Say again?
You just said that you'll sell us out at the soonest convenience.
I wouldn't do that at all. And what do you mean?
Yeah,
sell us out. I'm no sellout. I'm never a sellout.
Yeah, I would never sell you all out. Trust me.
Never sell you out. Because, see, this is the problem with pro-black. When people say pro-black, I think of things like this, right? Here you have, I'll give you a perfect example. O.J. Simpson, for instance. O.J. Simpson got into the big trial, murdered Nicole, right? I was a young kid then in elementary school when it was all going down, or junior high school. And you've seen what I would say is pro-black. People who didn't care about what happened, they just wanted to see him win a verdict. And then on the opposite side, people, I guess, being pro-white. People would say, I'll give you another example.
Wait a minute,
Obama.
Hold on a second. No.
Okay, you want me to
can't do that.
Just OJ.
You just said people who are black folks here, pro-black, can say they wanted to see a verdict go OJ's way. Why?
Just because he was black.
Wrong.
I've seen it.
Wrong.
I've heard people say
wrong. You have
I'm not saying all
you
people.
I'm not saying you. No, sir.
Misunderstood.
I'm telling you that they didn't either. You obviously, you young. That's right. I was in young. I was
I'm waiting to hear this.
I was in college. Listen to me. I was in college. You were in elementary school. I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reason why we didn't want O.J. Simpson to be convicted. And it had nothing at all to do with whether or not he killed the woman or not. It had everything to do with the fact that just 5 years earlier, we had watched Rodney King get beat the hell down in the middle of Los Angeles on video. There was no question what happened to him. And we watched his assailants nearly beat that man to death,
walk
out of that courtroom, found not guilty.
Right.
And
so
the point that we were making with that was that, now, if you're going to sit up here and do things like that, we did not want O.J. Simpson found not guilty because he was innocent. We wanted him found not guilty because the system was guilty. And if you are not going to acknowledge that your system is bigoted and is racist, then we should march this man out of here. If we're not going to convict all the guilty people who come in here, then we're not going to convict any of them. That was the purpose of it. If we're not going to convict everybody who's committed a crime, then you let everybody go.
Okay, so as I think that's still related to his race, because if it was a white man, if it was about the system not working solely, then it would have been any opportunity.
No, the system does not work for us. No.
Who's
the system
us?
Does
us being
not
black
work
people.
For us. That's the point. If the system is not going to work for black people when we're the victims,
black people,
then it should not work for white people when they're the victim.
Okay,
that's
now see this is this is where I say, you know, I feel that's why black people wanted him to win, because it was a black and a white thing. Okay, you say it has nothing to do with race, but it came back to race. Obama, it's another guy. I heard this come from people's mouths. Only reason why they wanted him in.
Wait. We're not going to do that here. Other broadcasts do that. This one does not.
What's that?
Back to OJ.
We don't talk about Obama?
Okay, wait a minute. About the point that I just made.
Okay, right.
Black people did not say let him off because he's black. We said let him off because the system is racist.
It fell on race. It fell on race, and he was a black man.
Okay, but we didn't say if he had killed another black person or something, we wouldn't have sat up here and said, okay, well, definitely lock him up for certain. And we didn't say it because she was white.
Well, what about a Spanish person?
Okay, I'm explaining it to you. If the system were racist, we wouldn't have been there. That's the point. You can't blame the victims and say they showed up spontaneously one day. We did not.
It was specifically a black man. It wasn't an Asian man. It could have been an Asian man if it was about race, but it was about a black man.
It was about how the system is treating us as black people, not about him. It could have been anybody.
I agree that the system works differently for a black person than for a white person. I'm not going to argue that at all. I'm just talking about that O.J. Simpson thing. Being pro-black just because doesn't make too much sense to me. Okay? In this country, it doesn't work. In this country, I'll give an example of why people have to think differently if you want better results. And this is just what I believe. Here in New York City, there was a woman raped by NYPD. It was a white woman. She got raped. The police tried to cover it up. Went to the verdict. They got off clean. She still was a rape woman. White woman. No Rodney King. No Al Sharpton. No Charles Barron. And I love Charles Barron. No black person decided to step up and attack the so-called racist NYPD. This was a perfect opportunity for them to come and attack the NYPD. And yet, none of them stepped up solely because she was a white woman. They totally lost the point. They totally lost the battle.
No, you've missed the point. The point is that white people have watched Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, Abner Louima, the list goes on and damn on, Patrick Dorisman. They sat back and watched that. And now black people are supposed to come swinging into the rescue when white people are eaten by the system that they have empowered and constructed. You've missed the point.
Okay.
If you don't want the system to devour you, then you need to keep the system from devouring me.
Okay,
when you saw it coming after me, the point is when you saw it come after me, you were supposed to jump up then. And you sat there and saw it eat me and said, well, we'll let the system play out. Well, now it's eating you. And you know what I'm saying? We'll let the system play out. So for you to say it was Al Sharpton, he was exactly where that white woman was when the system was devouring Sean Bell and Amadou Diallo and Abner Louima.
Okay.
That's the answer.
I'm going to say this, though. You're right about that point. And this is why being pro-black and being blinded behind your pro-blackness, you missed the point. The point, you said so yourself. See, when you do something to me and you allow it to happen to me and you don't come in my aid, it can happen to you. So that's what happened. But who does it happen to majority of the time? It happens to us.
Yes,
so,
and that's the point.
So why not take the opportunity to attack them when they're going to listen, when it happened to one
point
of their own?
No, that's not point. The point is
you don't think
happened.
So. You don't think that Al Sharpton, a person.
I'll tell you. I'll tell
say
you.
Again?
We don't have to.
They would have looked like national heroes.
I'll explain it to you. The reason why I need to respond when it happens to us is because of what you just said. It happens to us more often.
All right,
I'm explaining. I started the sentence. You can't respond to the first six words. It happens to us more often. That means you have more opportunities and more chances, more cases. It happens to a white person every once in a blue moon. It happens to us every day, which means there is no excuse. You can excuse somebody if they're not able to catch that rare woodpecker that they've seen in Arkansas. You can diamond woodpecker, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Cannot excuse somebody who says, yeah, I see all those blue jays, but we're not going to pull out our nets. I'm not going to get motivated until Diamond Bill shows up.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you see all these blue jays? We can deal with that. We're here to get birds. We can deal with that right now. Yeah, blue jays. But let's wait until Diamond Bill shows up. That's the problem. They are inexcusable because they have a chance to deal with this every day. And they're saying, well, we'll deal with it when it happens to us. What you're talking about is constructing a system of white privilege. Even black people will jump up and be activists for white people, even if they never do anything to help us. How in the world does that work?
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Hear me out. I am no way making an excuse for white people not stepping up to the plate when the law doesn't work. Okay? No one stepped up to the plate for that white woman. Not no white people. White people didn't step up to the plate for that woman. That woman's cries went unheard. Okay? The cries went unheard. What I'm saying is there is a battle. The battle going on. I don't like to lose. So I take opportunities, every opportunity I can get to win. That was an opportunity for the black people to win. Because like I said, I'm going to tell you. Because like we both said, it happens to us more. So when it happened there, it was an opportunity to expose the NYPD and then prevent things like that from happening again. And who would it happen to most likely? NYPD acting crazy? Us. So if you're preventing it from happening again, doesn't matter who it's happening to, you're preventing it from happening to us.
No. But you're not. Because you're putting the cart before the horse. The reason that the NYPD blew, the NYPD now feels empowered and emboldened to go after white women is because white people let them go after us for so long. Now that they're devouring us, they've done what all predators do. They're now moving on to bigger game. Now that you've empowered them and said that it's okay to rape the Negroes, now they've moved on to you. So let's go back to what I said before. You deal with this by dealing with the victimization of black people. Because by the time they show up at the white folks' house, it's too late. She doesn't understand. She's a victim of all this apathy this time. It's too late.
Yeah,
it's too late to scream. It's too late to scream, I'm white and victimized. It's too late because stopping them when they were doing it to black folks. Now they made it common. Do you know how many times they let police off for brutalization, murder, rape, and everything else for black folks? It's become common to do that.
Okay,
and now
but what I'm
face,
saying is,
now that the face has changed from a black face to a white face, white folks, you can put the brakes on now. No, you're supposed to put the brakes on right back there.
That's what I'm saying. The white people didn't step up in this case. What I'm saying is the black people should have stepped up in this case. I'm not calling for the white people.
Okay, white folks didn't step up, but black people should have. Are you serious?
Yeah, because this wasn't about the victim. It was about the NYPD, black people's enemy, my enemies. These are the guys running around doing dirt to my people.
Yeah,
so
they are our enemy. You're right. They are our enemy. Why come the white people don't recognize them as their enemy?
I could care less. I'm not there to think for them. I'm not there to think for them. I'm here to think for the black man and how the black man needs to succeed. And this was one of the opportunities I was talking about. But it was overshadowed by black, pro-blackness. No one ignored it because, hey, good, huh? It happened to a white lady, so let them eat that now. But guess what? You took a loss, too. An even bigger loss, because what that says now is if it can happen to them like that, you might as well go kill niggas every day.
Okay, but they're already doing that. You're acting
excuse
like that's
my
not
language.
Already happening.
That was too much. I'm sorry.
But you're acting like that's not already happening.
Yeah, but it progresses more. The more we accept that type of behavior.
More than it is now? More than it is now?
Yeah, it'll progress more. You can't allow it when it happens. Martin Luther King, he told that injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. Okay? You
yes.
just don't
When's
let
that
it happen.
Catch on? When's that going to catch on outside the black community? That's the question. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Oh, my last word. Look, I love to see black people doing good, positive things. This appears to be one of those good, positive things I like to see black people do. So I'm going to be tuning in. I'm going to be listening more. And excuse some of my language. And hope you enjoyed.
Well, thank you very much for calling in, brother. Please do call us again. We enjoyed having you here. Let's go ahead and see if we can get a caller from the 412. You've been waiting for a while. Thank you for your patience. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, how you doing?
What's your name and where you calling from?
My name's Michelle, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh.
Okay, I'm not sure if you're on speaker or Bluetooth or something. I'm going to try to turn your volume up here some, but it's coming in real low on you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's a bit better there. What was your name again?
My name's Michelle, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh.
Hello, Michelle from Pittsburgh. What's on your mind, black woman?
I'm calling because I had a question. I am in the process of building a record label, and right now I'm in the process of getting, like, the publishing and whatnot. So, but I was having concerns in terms of the back of my mind in terms of the, I guess, the landscape of it. Like, I research and saying, like, and talking to people in the industry and whatnot and saying that, it's really not a good time to be in the industry or build an industry or whatnot. And then I have the other people in terms of the independent record label and saying that, oh, it's good or whatnot. And I'm just, like, I'm 25, so I really want to, I don't want no kids, so I'm trying to have a financial secure so I can pass someone else to my kids. So I just want to make sure that it's something that I love to do, but at the same time, I'm looking at the landscape and, like, the reality
of
America.
Okay, I don't know what's going on with your phone. It sounds like you're, like, holding your hand over it or something. And it would be difficult for a lot of people to make out what you're saying. But I think you're asking about trying to start a record. You want to get involved in the music business.
Yes.
Okay. How old are you?
I'm 25.
Okay. I'm not sure if you're on a kazoo or an Obama phone or something. I'm not really sure. But try that one more time.
25.
Okay, are you saying 25?
Yes.
Okay. How many children do you have?
None.
Okay, we have no children. How much experience in the music business do you have at 25?
I have three.
You have three what?
Three music experience.
Three experience? I'm not understanding what you mean.
3 years of musical experience.
3 years of musical experience. Okay. I'm not sure if you're calling from a bunker or where, but 3 years of musical experience. Can you explain to me exactly what that experience is?
I went to school, and also I've been playing gigs and whatnot. So just, like, a lot of, like, clubs and whatnot.
What kind of music do you want to do?
I want to do R&B, and I'm working, and then I want to branch out to hip hop and rock and whatnot. But I know, like, in terms of, I want to eventually go back and be a producer, and then I'm gonna be an owner, and then probably branch off into other stuff. But I want to make sure that I have a established position before I branch off to other stuff.
Okay. Well, what I'll tell you is that the music business is a very tough thing to enter into, especially now with so many options being out there available. You are 25 years old, and even though you're in a major metropolitan area, it doesn't sound like you've made a lot of progress since you're 22. Especially if you're having to ask the questions that you're asking right now. there's a word called practicality, and you're going to have to start at some point looking at that, because the problem is it doesn't matter how talented you are at something like music. It doesn't matter. Making something financially viable has absolutely nothing to do with who is the best at thing about it, but it's also the sad thing about it. As I explained before, Beta, back in the 80s, Beta was a better format than VHS. And yet, what do we have today? Well, we had VHS, which became DVD. Beta lost, and VHS won. Nobody thinks that Microsoft is the best operating system up there, but it dominates the landscape, even though it's not the best. Nobody thinks that McDonald's is the best hamburger. I'm pretty sure you got plenty of local places in Pittsburgh to make a much better hamburger than McDonald's. And yet, who's got the most locations in Pittsburgh? We don't even have to ask. My point is, just because you're the most talented and the best does not mean you're going to financially succeed. Right now, you're asking finance questions. How do I become financially successful at the music business? I think someone once said it best. If you want to make $1 million in jazz, all you have to do is invest $2 million if you want to make $1 million at it. That's going to be a hard thing to do. If you don't have any connections, it's going to be even harder. Let me ask something a little bit different here. Do you enjoy making music?
Yes, yes.
Have you considered a life where what you do? What instruments do you play?
I play the bass guitar and I play the drums.
Okay, so you're actually a musician. Comes in handy. The next thing I would do is to ask you, if you were unable to play music tomorrow, what would you be doing?
I would probably be cooking.
Okay. You believe in trying tough to get into fields, don't you?
Yeah,
food service is probably second to music. Music, clothing label, food service. I think it goes in that order. The entertainment business, clothing business, and food service. I think it goes in order. None of those things you're trying to get into as an independent artist are cheap or easy. Kendrick Lamar got with an already established company that could help promote him. Apparently, you haven't found one that you're happy with. Either that or maybe what you're putting out is not quite so entertaining. Now, that's something that may offend a lot of people, but I'm the authority. I give it to people straight. Are you sure that what you're putting out is actually that good? Because American Idol gets thousands of people who try out for it, and when they get done, I think they whittle it down to 16. That other 984 people. Most of those people who went up there might have been okay. Some of them may have been talented. Some of them might have been genuinely talented. But the question is not, are you talented? The question is, do you have a talent that can actually sell? So that would be a question for you to ask yourself.
Have you had
that heart-to-heart with yourself?
Oh, yes. I'm very honest with myself. I also considering just taking it back in terms of just being a CEO or whatnot and just promote other artists so I could just make more money financially that way.
If I were dealing with music today, my first question would be, do you have a studio of your own?
I personally don't, but I
okay.
have my...
Now, you do understand that's where the power is, don't you?
Yes, that's
because I don't care how talented you are, if you do not have a studio, or worse, if you know where there's a studio but you can't afford studio time, that studio is going to determine whether or not you go anywhere.
Yeah.
Black people focus so much on being in front of the camera that we never figure out doing something else. Because you are a musician, if you had your own studio, you would be able to determine who's actually really talented and who isn't.
Yes, I've also been in the process of getting now, like, as I'm growing older, like, I'm thinking in terms of reality, so I probably won't be able to be in front of the camera, and I want to be in the back, and I have to make more money and also have a lot more privacy that way. That's why I'm figuring out more about myself.
Yeah, because everybody has to have that moment with themselves. Everybody does. I mean, every young man wants to be a football player when he's in school. Every young man wants to be an athlete. And then you wake up one day and realize you're 35. That's probably impossible at this point.
Yeah, so I'm taking it in terms of just looking at the situation in terms of how it really is and then going to see how other ways I can make money behind the scenes instead of being on front. Because I'm finding out more that I can make more money behind the scenes in a variety of ways instead of just being in front of the camera and then dealing with all that drama. I'm finding out more and more that it's probably just best to just go
I would have thought after 30 years from Eazy-E to P. Diddy, I would have thought by now black folk after 30 years realized the power is behind the console. The power is in the studio. It's not in front of the cameras. The fame is in front of the cameras. The power and the wealth has been in the studio since Edison. It's been in the studio since Edison. If I were you, I'd be trying to figure out how to get $30,000-$40,000 together to get my own console, my own monitors, and my own studio. You do that, and other people will be coming to you. Oh, yeah, somebody who knows how to work Pro Tools, by the way. Although, you would probably be a good idea to invest in an education in Pro Tools also. And if you know how to do all that all the way around, girl, you'll be 27 years old with other people coming to you. You won't have to play anything. And if you want to, you can put together a band if you want to. You own the damn studio. Plenty of rock. That's white kids do it. Whenever you hear about these white rock bands, it's always one of them who already owned a studio or had studio equipment. They talk about garage bands. It was always one of those white kids who already had their own recording equipment. Black folk are the only ones who come to the table with nothing and try to figure out how to hustle up on a handout. Instead of getting into the business, we try to figure out how to get signed. Get into the business. If your credit's okay, you can put yourself together right now, and maybe you can get away with spending $20,000 to get somebody's used equipment. Get your own. Get educated about how to use your equipment, and 2 years' time, you'll have other people coming to you. You can help develop and cultivate other artists, and you can just take a finder's fee for them if you want to. Or you can make, that's the way you make your own record label. You don't make a record label by being a musician. You make a record label by having equipment. Ask Eazy-E. Ask Dr. Dre. Ask Suge Knight. You make a record label by owning the studio, not by being in front of the camera. So if your goal is really to be an executive, then why don't you just bypass that damn microphone and just go straight to being an executive? What are we waiting around?
That's what I'm finding out more and more. And I can also use my musician skills just to produce more. So it's one less person I have to pay for.
Well, you know what? That'll be easier. But here's another thing. We talked about Patrice Wilson out there in California, who signed that girl who did that crazy song Friday. And Patrice, I mean, think about that. Think about that.
Yeah.
That was his song, basically, though. That was his song. That wasn't hers. That was his song. What I'm saying is, why can't you do the same thing? If you really do that, you write the music, you can help perform if you want to, you're going to keep your publishing rights, and just get somebody else to perform it for you. Now, you'll get signed in, but my point is, you don't have to give up those things. The only thing you're giving up is, quote, the spotlight. Let me tell you, the most successful songwriter in history is a woman that you've never heard of. A woman that you never heard of. Most of you never heard of her. You can go look up right now if you want to. Her name is Diane Warren.
Yeah.
A Jewish lady. Never heard of her. Do you know Diane?
Yeah, I actually do.
Oh, good. Tell me about her.
She wrote songs for Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston, Celine Dion. Also Britney Spears, too, for some reason. But she wrote, like, from, like, the 70s to, like, the 90s. She was, like, really big at songwriting. Along with that guy who wrote with Earth, Wind, and Fire. I can't remember his name right now, but him, too.
Are we friends on Facebook?
No, I was trying to find you on Facebook, but...
I'm under the name Jason Black or the Black Authority. Just look for a picture of Eldridge Cleaver wearing the leather jacket. Do yourself a favor and send me a friend invitation right now. You are 25 years old, and you know who Diane Warren is. You are absolutely correct. Now you've got my attention. Now, before now, you didn't really have it. You got my undivided attention now. She is absolutely correct. Diane's list of people that she's written for is longer than I am all. Probably the most important song that she ever wrote, in my opinion, was I Don't Want to Miss a Thing for Aerosmith. And the reason for that is because, contrary to what you all might tell yourselves, Aerosmith did not have a number one single or number one song ever. Been out there for decades, never had a number one. Not even Walk and Warren, the movie Armageddon, and I Don't Want to Miss a Thing that gave Aerosmith their first number one. Now, that's knowing the music business. When I say I got a group, but we haven't had a hit song, obviously these kids know how to play. They just don't know how to write a song that's going to be number one. Get to somebody who does. And now, who we call? Timbaland knows how to write a number one song. Not for himself, but he knows how to write for other people. That's my point. So you've got my undivided attention now. Something about that, that's the direction you need to think in. You are young enough right now that you've got something that people like me don't have. You have youth and you have years to invest. You start investing the next 24 months and you'll be running Pittsburgh by the time you're 27. Why worry about it? You'll be running that damn place. Because you've got some sense and some competence. And while everybody else is out there breaking their necks trying to do, quote, R&B, it ain't really R&B, by the way. If you sound like R. Kelly or Chris Brown, that crap ain't R&B. By the way, but I think even you know that.
Yeah.
If you don't,
I actually got a book. I don't know if it's by Ricky Vincent called Party Music, and it was about like the Black Panthers. I didn't know they had a group, so I was just reading up on that, and also just like I'm a total like readaholic, so I just read like a bunch of stuff. So, but I'm really trying to learn the business, so that way I can have a lot more knowledge to get and develop great avenues to get where I want to be. So, sorry.
Well, like I say, we definitely like to speak with more in depth about that if you need further assistance. But for you, I'm just going to tell you right now. You would be wasting your time, wasting your life trying to get a record deal. You want to know how to start your own record label? Go buy your own equipment and learn how to use Pro Tools. That's how you do it. Back in the old days, you didn't have Pro Tools. You just had to use the console. That's why Dre and P. Diddy and Suge Knight and Yellow Boy, and we can go down the list, had advantage over everybody else. That's why you couldn't put them out of work. That's why DJ Quick didn't have to sell albums, and yet today he has replaced Dr. Dre as the hottest hip-hop producer. because he learned how to use the equipment back then, when 94, 92, when he was putting out Born and Raised Compton. And he was telling us back then that he knew how to use the equipment. He has never, out of the music business, people have come and people have gone. Quick has remained. Eric Berman has remained. Why? P. Diddy has remained. Dre has remained. Why? Because there were a bunch of people in the studio, but only one of them actually knew how to work the studio. You can't move this man. This is his castle. You're trying to get access. And it costs money to get access if you don't own the equipment and own facilities. Oh, yeah, and know how to work it. You want to take, you're asking about getting in the business? I'm saying you're wasting your time. You could be running the business. Why not do that instead?
Yeah, I'm finding out more and more. But I wanted to thank you. I've been watching your videos, and I just wanted to call in and have my questions answered. And I will definitely get back, try to get some equipment or whatnot. And so I definitely want to thank you and whatnot, and Black First.
Black First, sister, and please keep in touch with us. Go ahead and contact us, because there's not a lot of serious black people out there that you can even converse these things with. So keep in touch with us for nothing else, than because we actually understand what you're talking about. You take care out there. Let me grab caller from the 313. I'm holding on for a while. Thank you for patience. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Is this Jason?
This voice sounds familiar.
Yeah, let me click out. I thought I had pushed the one again. It must have put me
all
back.
All right,
in the
I'll put you back on hold here. Let's check and see somebody who's waiting. Caller from the 786, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Jason. Black First.
Black First, brother. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Lonnie from Miami.
What's on your mind, black man?
I always get sidetracked with somebody who call in your show, like the brother from Brooklyn. We got enough black people who jump on white issues when white people get screwed over by the system. We need more black people to jump on when black people daily, hourly, just about getting screwed by the system. It's not going to work because some white woman gets screwed by the system and we jump on and want to try to protect her and think that we're going to get a residual effect of security from that. That's not how it works. And we're the only group of people who think that if we help everybody else, then suddenly everybody else is going to help us. And that's backward thinking. Everybody's
looking
we're
always trying to find
themselves.
A sideways, or we're always trying to find some back door to progress. We're trying to find some white person, you know, to play linebacker, and they shield for us and block. They're a blocker for us, and we see if we can try to scurry around them like a rat. We never try to take the spear point. We never try to take the lead. We're always trying to find some back door to things, and that's not the way you make progress. We're always trying to appeal to people's humanity and greater consciousness. Brother, we've been trying to appeal to their great consciousness since the slave ships pulled up. We've been trying to appeal to their consciousness since Ghana, and what has that gotten us?
Gotten us nowhere with a 20% black male unemployment rate. I told people 12 years ago, I said, what'll happen if they ever just stop hiring black people? What are we going to do? We don't have any black businesses. And people, they looked at me like, that's never going to happen. And today, black males are 21%. That's one out of every five black men who you see is unemployed. It's already happening.
Okay, now, let's go deeper into those numbers, though, okay? Let's go deeper. Now, black male unemployment in most places is running around 20%. But if you go to major metropolitan areas, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, D.C., New York, New Orleans, it's at 50%. So if you take it nationwide, it's horrific. If you look at just your major metropolitan areas where our biggest concentrations of black males are, it's not just horrific. It's catastrophic. And nobody wants to look at that and call it for this. It is downright catastrophic. 50%. Do you know what a reciprocal effect that has? When you have a situation where you can't do for yourself, and in turn, you now can't do for your children. 50% of you are locked out of the capitalistic system in our major metropolitan areas. That's what that means. 50% of you are locked out. You're locked out. You cannot get in. Because back when the rate was 25%, you didn't stick together as a cohesive whole. You said we're all people instead of saying we're all black, even though that you were segregated. We're all people. You kept beating that people drum until you got to 50%. Now you need to be able to stick together, and you can't, although you need to stick together now more than ever. Because when those other people, as you said, when those other people stop singing we're all people, what are you going to do? Well, they stopped singing we're all people. Now what?
Yeah, they're being a corner by themselves, and that's all we're doing. We're getting isolated into this old stupid corner that everybody's not figuring out and not seeing, and they're dealing with that 10 to 15% of black people who actually pay attention to what's going on in the world. The other 85% of the black community is just, you guys handle it. You guys pay attention to it. And the weirdest thing that I always hear from black people is when you see somebody running, black people just run. They don't ask questions. They just turn and running. Well, the rest of us, this 15%, is running and yelling, "Hey, everybody, the monster is coming, run." And they're like, "Yeah, no, it's not coming. Nah, I need shoes. I need purse. Let me get my hair done." And black women not realizing that the first people that they're cutting off from being employed are your men. They're cutting black men off of being employment, because that's how you uplift the community. It's not black women that's going to uplift the black community. It's black men being employed, building their own businesses, that's going to start a unified black economy, and they're not getting that. Your black men are being cut out of the financial connection with this country for a reason, because they're going to crash down the black community by eliminating the profit margin of black men. That can't continue.
The problem is we don't see ourselves as black first. We see ourselves as men or as women who happen to be black when somebody asks us. But we can get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, "I'm black." Consequences of that. Everybody wants to play that game right up until George Zimmerman or Michael Dunn or the New York Police Department show up. Or when they get fired. That's when black people get their black, by the way. When they get fired. Let them get fired from their job, they become black as Atlanta. Right up until then, they don't really care about that. They really don't.
Yeah. Up until they get fired, then, hey, we're all just people. Everybody just working here. Everybody the same employee. Get fired, they fired me because I'm black. This type of reality is there. That's not reality. You should have been, they hired a black person. To me, you hire the black man. And when you fire me, you're going to fire a black man. But guess what? I'm going to be on my way to building something for myself the entire time through. And not worried about working for some not black people. And I got a secure job for the next 20 years, 25 years for somebody else's job while they build a house and while they take vacations. You're sitting there doing their work, essentially their work for them, making them rich, but you're stable because you paid your rent and you paid your light bill. So you
until
did
you
everything
can't
that you're supposed to do. Exactly. Sooner or later, we're
doing
all
that
just
until the day comes that you just walk in and they let you go, or they start messing with you or whatever. The time to be planning for that day they're going to be messing with you is before you got there. That's when you're supposed to be putting your ducks in a row before they got there. And instead, what we do is we sit there and play this game, and that's just wrong. That's just wrong. We sit up there and play that mess and got nothing to show for it.
Yeah, and I'll tell all the black people out there, I live in Miami, which is supposed to be this melting pot with people from all over the world. And I work in an office, and it's me and one other black person, one other black guy, male that works there. It's two. And it's an office of 75 people, and it's two black males that work there. It's a dire strait. We are being cut out of the economic pie, and everybody needs to realize it's the first people to do it. Our black males are being cut out, and black women need to realize black men are being cut out of this economic pie. We need to start building our own businesses.
Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. There's 75 people. There's 75 people, and only two of them are black. Do you know what that means? That means you guys couldn't even form a circle. You couldn't even form a triangle. How are we going to protect ourselves? How are you going to protect yourselves when there's only two of you?
He's not even an all in for black people type of guy. I'm the only one there. I'm by myself. I'm alone. I'm the only one there that's looking and saying, "Hey, you gotta be with the black people." I'm the only one there. Everybody else is looking and saying, "Hey, we got laws and this guy over here just he simping trying to find a anyone, not even just a white woman. He's just trying to find any easy pair of panties that he want to get in or he can get in, not getting any, by the way." And I'm the only one sitting there like, "Hey, pay attention. Here's what's going on in the world." And he's, you know, getting high top age, trying to have swag.
And he'll keep doing that until the day they let it go. And then he'll become the blackest thing you ever saw when that happens. But it'll be too late. We don't have time to argue with somebody and to get to recognize what's going on outside the door. At this point, you either get it and you're on board and you're ready, or you got to ship out. We have no time to argue with them anymore, none whatsoever. You get your act together, though, and get your situation right, get your credit and your paper together, and start your own thing so that you can leave that behind you, because that kind of guy right there, you'll be passing him very, very shortly. Understand something, people. Trayvon Martin was gunned down with very nice shoes and a very nice hood sweater on. And people need to forget that while we obsess with buying shoes and other commercial consumer goods, he got gunned down with some very nice shoes and a very nice hood on.
Trayvon Martin, Jordan Davis, and it was just another kid who was just running through somebody's yard here in Florida. Black people, do not come to Florida. And if you do come to Florida, South Florida, and that's it. Miami-Dade County, Broward County, stay away from everything north of that. The rest of this state will literally mow you down and keep on moving without a second glance. They will mow you down and keep on moving. I don't even want to travel outside of South Florida because it's bad enough here in South Florida. But once you get outside of these two counties, it is KKK straight through. And it does not matter. Sanford, Florida, Tampa, Florida, Orlando, these are death pools for black males. Death pools. And black people need to realize that we need a strong, connected community with our own jobs where we protect ourselves instead of getting something and then moving off to a white neighborhood. Because once you move to a white neighborhood, you're stuck there. You're by yourself. Hell, I live in the neighborhood where it's about 70% white. I stay in the house. I don't go outside with all of these people because I already know I'm pretty much by myself. And we need to start unifying to become to ourselves. But we got to get rid of that 80% that just wants to, you know, turn it up on Friday night.
Very well said. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Thank you for doing your show. Keep on doing it. I'm going to keep on banging the drum and keep on building. We all need to keep on building. Build something for ourselves and not try to get a job from somebody. Have a good night.
Blackbird.
Thank you very much for joining us, Brother Blackbird, as always. Understand something. He just told you. The whole state of Florida for black folk is basically a sundown town. This has been a result of the failure of building any type of economic base whatsoever. Have the money, you don't own anything. And if you don't own anything, you can't control anything. No one can just come after you willy-nilly and run you down at will. But this kind of conversation makes your brains hurt. You'd much rather be talking about something else, wouldn't you? Much rather that I gave you something different to talk about, more entertaining. Well, forget about it. It's time to start talking about some adult things here. Because this aversion to taking on accountability and adult responsibility is getting us killed. Literally. And this is the first place that's actually demanded that we actually talk about that. I got several callers on here from the 267 and beyond, but I want to take somebody who's been waiting a little while here first. A caller from the 562, you're on live with the Black Panel.
Hey, TV, how you doing?
Black First, brother, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Black First, Jay Post, Long Beach, California, by Oakland.
Thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. What's on your mind, Black Man?
I was just listening to The Last Poet a couple of days ago, and I believe you probably know this. It's called Die Niggas. And I was just thinking about it, how those words pretty much embodies what's going on today, how we don't value black life, period, actually value dying more than anything else. And at the end, which was I love, is pretty much speak of what we believe in as far as the intelligent community of black people, which is die niggas, so black folks can take over. And with that being said, it really made me scratch my head when I went to the so-called Black Conscious Conference here in Southern California. And everybody that was speaking were preachers.
I guess I can figure out where this is going, but go ahead.
No, but what I'm trying to say pretty much is just what happened to actually bringing in, you know, black men or black women who has been in the trenches or know something about the system and actually waking up our people. You know, Dr. Umar was here, but yet they didn't get Dr. Umar. So, I don't know. I just feel like, we on 100% RPM that there's more and more of us that pretty much are going to the wayside and would rather live in delusion.
Let me find out here, how old are you?
29.
Okay. Did your parents leave you anything to build with at 29?
Oh, no. Not at all. No.
Now, there are some ignorant and dumb people out there who think that your parents have to be dead to leave you something. And
right.
That just shows you how ignorant and ridiculous that a lot of black people are, that you say, did they leave you something? And they ask, oh, my parents aren't dead yet. This shows you the low level that we exist at. That they think their parents have to be dead to leave them something.
Right. Right.
Parents should be leaving you something before you're born, to be totally honest with you. But at 29, and your parents have been giving you things, so what that means is that, don't you know something here? J-Post, I want you and everybody else to understand something.
Okay.
When you don't leave in something, don't you know that that's the same as if you never existed?
I agree.
Most people don't think of it that way. If you left your children nothing, you lived, you died, and they got nothing from you, it is the same. It is exactly the same as if you never existed at all.
Right.
You might well have never have even lived if the only thing you did was drop some kids off here.
Well, I just want to add, the crazy part is I was just thinking about it because I'm writing my personal statement for law school. I was thinking about it when I was growing up, how pretty much my parents was, I want to say, content position of being inferior as natural. And to hear some folks in my family, you know, like my grandmother, to say that, well, you might not be rich financially, but you're rich in values and the way you were brought up and character. I mean, you know, I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, I want more.
Now, you have to understand where that came from, okay? This will be a good opportunity to remind you all where it came from. It came from two places. It came from black male cowards after the plantations, and it came from your clergy who were more than happy to sell you out. In every city in America, everybody at the church has a direct line to the city council mayor's office.
Right.
And they make sure it's that way. So just in case the rest of you are uppity, they've got a pulse on where black people are. Send you out for one purpose and one purpose only, if you're the clergy, to make sure that black people do not get organized. Now, Malcolm X shows you. When they beat the brother in New York, he got the Muslims together, and they showed up. They showed up at the police station. This is a clergyman. He didn't gather brothers together to go home. He gathered them together at the police station. And this is about to go down. Black ministers, they do exactly the opposite. Farrakhan does exactly the opposite. Their job is to make sure you don't get together, because the city council and the mayor have told them that we'll let you run a little church. We'll let you do what you're doing. We won't get you in trouble. No building inspections. You just keep make sure everything stays nice and quiet, because if it doesn't, we can make things rough for you. And they let them know that very quickly. We can make things rough for you.
Right.
And they have been doing that and selling us down the river for 160 years now. That's what you see as their job and their function, to teach you that it's just your burden in life to live this third-class citizenship. That's what they teach you.
Oh, I wanted to ask you something, TBA, before I forget. How do you counteract individuals or a group of people, they're black, who pretty much threaten you with violence for speaking the way you are speaking?
How do you counteract people who threaten you with violence for speaking the way that I'm speaking?
Yes.
You need to call two friends, Mr. Smith and Mr. Wesson.
That was true there.
I don't argue with anybody who threatens my personal safety. I don't go back and forth with people online, and I'm certainly not going to go back and forth with somebody standing in front of me. Sure. So I don't pay attention to what people say. I pay attention to what they do. So when somebody starts talking about they want to get to the next level, Boy Scouts motto, be prepared. And just understand that black men have a terrible habit that after 160 years that we're walking around here as if our job, this is why I started this broadcast off about tonight. For those of you who missed the beginning of the broadcast, the whole point tonight was about how we try to make people happy with us by being non-threatening. Black males are so worried about being called angry. Oh, they just got you down now. You don't want to be called angry, do you? As the great actor Roscoe Brown said, if you're a black man who's not angry, you're out of your damn mind. Damn right, I'm angry. I'm mad as hell. And if you get up in my face, you're going to find out how mad I am. Don't worry about some jackass on the internet. You don't move me. I'm not worried about you. You come up in my face or anything like that, it's showtime. Oh, you didn't know it was real time, but I did. You didn't know it was real, but I did. And I'm not going to argue at all. In the state of Louisiana, if somebody even threatened you, you have the ability to shoot them right on sight. As soon as you are in fear for your life, you can threaten them right then. They threaten you, you can shoot them right then. Okay. See, it has certain perks living in this state, by the way. And there's a lot of other states you need to learn the law where you are. But understand something. I don't play childish games with grown people. I don't play those games at all. So if you want to run up on Mr. Black the wrong way, that's perfectly fine. You can do that. Understand, you're taking your life in your hands. I haven't had a whole lot of people who wanted to take me up on that. I'm a rather quiet and unassuming fellow, I think. But if it ever comes down to it, don't come out with it or don't come out. That's real talk.
Appreciate taking on my call, sir, and looking forward for the 7 a.m. and Black Forest.
Black Forest, brother, thank you very much for joining us. Don't ever argue with anybody over your physical safety. Didn't you learn that after Wilmington? Didn't you learn that after Tulsa? Didn't you learn after the Black Panthers in Philadelphia? You don't argue with anyone, debate with anyone on your physical safety. Your physical safety is a right. I don't care who it is who threatens it. Your physical safety is a right. And if we had more Black people who were determined to protect their safety, as opposed to more Black people worried about what people are going to say about them protecting their safety, we'd be a lot better off than we are. Oh, I'm not supposed to tell you that because I might seem angry. Caller from the 267, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, good evening. And thanks for taking
What's your name?
Call.
Where are you calling from?
This is Kai Sahu from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
It sounds like you in your rocking chairs. Everything all right?
Yeah, I moved a little bit. Yeah, it does squeak. You know, that's how old it is, you know.
I'm going to donate some WD-40. But what's on your mind, Black Man?
Well, I'm the one that wrote you on your email, you know, like, what are we going to do with it and how do you fight this type of system? And you wrote me back to call in. And this is my first time calling in, so I listened a while and I see you're talking about cause and effect, basically, and it's never no real solution. I mean, we know what we need in our hearts. If you're a human being and you cry and you're afraid and you got fear and you got third eye and chakras and melons and pineal gland, you know exactly what to do. It's just that we don't get time enough to culture it to bring it out, you know, because we're all one family. I mean, how many of us going through these family reunions all over America, and you always got a Smith, a Robinson, McFadden. All the names are the same, and we still today don't think we're family, because we're stuck on the red, white, and blue, and nobody's showing us that particular knowledge. We 360 now. We tried it politically. We tried it educationally. We tried it spiritually, churchly, through their religious ways, and we tried it, and now it's all spiritual now. So we know we have to turn within, and that's where we find that we all got something in common. But you're forbidden to talk about that here in this country. We're forbidden to talk about it. I mean, Martin was getting ready to open up the floodgates on that type of knowledge. Malcolm, Marcus Garvey, They are always talking about what? Emoja, unity, one family, one love, Jimi Hendrix, one love, Bob Marley, one love. Come on. And we never get a talk show host or a talk show or a conversation or a town hall meeting or a political meeting that touches that subject. It's like taboo here. And we all know it inside. You know it. We sitting up here because we don't admit it openly. We live in a lie every day. And this is why we talk about cause and effect all the time, because we know we better not tell the truth. Talk to
How old are you?
Who?
How old are you?
Oh, I'm 64.
64 years old. So you're from the civil rights generation.
Yeah, man. I kind of
got a little... How many children do you have?
Only three. Only three. And that was too many. But anyway, you know, that I got tons of grands, so, and they love me to death, but it still doesn't do anything the world that they live in. You know, it's like me going over the same problem that I learned about, that I should have told them about, and I still got to go through it again. I used to be pissed off with my daughters with that. I said, well, why do you think I'm here? I done went through that dumb stuff, and I'm trying to tell you how not to go through it. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is what grandparents are for. So we live the lie. We sit here and suffer. And then we go, oh, those my grand. Yeah, right. Them the ones that pulling your hair and teeth out. But it's inside, man, your heart. If you know right from wrong, you don't need to find your way home. You is home. If we know what to do in our hearts. I remember when I was in the Marine Corps in the 70s, and I was down in North Carolina, and I thought I knew what racism was, but I found out, you know, I found out what rednecks and all that stuff was about. But we had a code of honor down there in the Marine Corps, North Carolina. And we had this funny shake we used to do. We used to pop each other on the top of the hand, the bottom, pop, 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 pop. And it was so tight that I didn't see racism on base, not even off base, because if I was walking down the road coming from the red light district, coming back to the base from a nice weekend out, and I'm still a little woozy or a little drunk or just walking on the road, five or six brothers would pull over. You okay, man? You need to lift back the base? Come on, we'll take you. Or if you're stuck on the road, you got a flat tire or your hood is up on your car, brother, and you standing there and two white boys standing there with you, 16 black brothers would automatically pull over. You okay, man? Yeah. Well, we'll tow you back to, we'll tow you in. Come on, we'll take care of you. And the whitey seen how we was, so they didn't play with us. And at the same time, it made us stand up straight. And we was learning something from that money couldn't buy. Respect and honor and righteousness. And we instituted it down there. And it was so. And when I came out in 71, and I thought it was worldwide, you know, I thought we had came around, you know. Man, when I came out to Corps, and they didn't even have it. They didn't have it in the street. I said, oh, Lord, we ain't going to make it. We're not going to make it this way. And I knew back in the 70s that if we don't take care of our precious elders' ways and knowledge and information, we going with the wrong people. We going to be dragged down the hill. I mean, whew, I mean, it was great living down in North Carolina with that type of brotherhood, I would say. It was an automatic brotherhood. And this thing went across military lines. Like, if you had a brother that was in the Navy, he was your brother. But the Marine Corps taught to hate the Navy, and the Navy was taught to hate the Marines. You know how they do us. If they walk across each other's lines, a big fight would break out. But for real, we the brothers wasn't hitting each other. We went after the other guy, you know. But it was a brotherhood, man, that only human beings can produce. It was a brotherhood that only human beings can institute. And that's what it is that we got to do. If we leave him alone tomorrow...
That's why you want to talk about your opinions, because you need that.
Well, when I was listening to the show, we was talking about cause and effect. What he did to us and what happened, what we should have did. That's the norm of the day. Every meeting I go to, I'm political. I'm an activist up here in Philadelphia. And every meeting we go to, and we're trying to force them to that discussion of brotherhood, of unity, of family. That's what we're trying to do right now in Philadelphia. And they trying to push us out of North Philly and West Philly as I speak. And the only reason why they're getting ahead of it is because we're not together. We're not unified. I mean, it's unbelievable. I feel for my grandkids and great-grand. They're going to live in a place like this? I think we still on the plantation. I know we still on. Yes, what happened? You went to a commercial? My brother, you still there? We must have got cut off or something because I can't hear a thing. See, we're not allowed to talk this kind of stuff. Brother Earl, you still there? I guess they want me to hang up first. Let me see. Let me contact him. Yeah, it's nothing like unity. I loved it. I'm hitting you up now on your Facebook, Brother Earl.
All right, brother. I think we've got you back loaded up again. You should be able to hear everybody.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was getting ready there.
No, there's so many on the line. There's so many of you on the line that Blog Talk does that from time to time, people who work with it. Like I say, technical support promised me they were going to deal with that, and like I said, it's got that same deal that the ISPs tell me when they're going to deal with it. So it is what it is in the meantime.
Yeah,
but I
no
wanted
problem.
To ask you here. You say you have three kids, okay?
Yeah.
You're 64 years old. 64. That's a pretty good stretch of time, brother. So that means you're born in
I'm
what,
a
19?
Young man. That's
you were
a
born
young
19.
Man.
You were born 1950.
1949.
Okay,
I'll be 65 in a couple more months.
All right. That's magnanimous. Now, here's the thing. What I'm interested in finding out is, what do you own, what do you control, and what are you passing down?
What am I passing down, and what do I own?
Yes, because here's the thing. If you're 64 going on 65, you've got three kids. We can give all the good thoughts in the world. But if we didn't give them the raw materials and the raw tools that they need, then all these good vibrations aren't helping them.
Well, you can leave your spiritual DNA in them. You know, my son is just like me. Now, I am leaving them a house and a nice couple lump sums of money, but the main thing is that I want their character to be sort of like mine so that they can understand where they at. That's what I'm leaving behind. Is I'm not worrying about the material things, because if you got material things and your mind is not right, you still don't exist neither. It's see, we got spirituality and we're physical, so you can't just separate them two. You got to leave everything here, or don't leave nothing. Now, my grandkids and kids, they is into it. They is into Black history, their knowledge. They know how to ask questions. They drive the teachers crazy. And they love Pop-Pop. Now, my sons and daughters and them, they're a little wiry, but they coming around now because they getting older, too. And now they understand a lot of things that we used to talk about. And I think that's one of the greatest assets I'm leaving behind, that they went out as scientists and they came back with spirituality degrees that you need to make it. You can have a spoon in your mouth and you ain't nothing if your spirituality is incorrect or not hooked up or you don't use it or realize what it is. My kids know, all three of them, and my grandkids really know, because I get to take care of them on the summertime, and we go to the beach, and, oh, man, I take them everywhere, teach them what it is, the nature of things. They're scientists. We're all scientists. That's what life is about. It's nothing but a classroom from our creator. Not their creator now. Let's don't get it mixed up. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about something a little higher. And that's what we are. We're scientists down here. We supposed to be knowing all the knowing. And that's how I teach them to know all the knowing. And that's why I call them scientists, because science keeps you in the realm of logic. It keeps you right, upright. It answers the what, when, where, why, and how of every thing you touch, person, place, or thing, and you'll come out pretty rounded. You'll be able to even see things sometimes. Like your third eye open up, you could look right through a person and tell just where they coming from just by the way they dress and carry themselves, especially up here in Philly. I was surprised to hear that brother say Florida is like that too, but I guess they got some ground in every state. The United States supports the KKK, so now I know why they've been here so long, because they really popping it now. And so us family has to get together. We have to institute emoja, which is unity. And all you got to do is love one another like we did down in North Carolina. I didn't know these brothers from a can of paint, and they treated me better. They treated me better than some of my sisters and brothers. It's 13 of us, but them brothers down there, they was from all walks of the earth. Even the brown people, the Spanish people was in, you know, they was in our court, and we treated each other with honor and respect, and they saw it. And we demonstrated, and they felt it, and they left us alone. We could do anything we wanted to do when we wanted to do it. I don't know what happened to that concept and why it's not touched today. As human beings made by our creator, it's in your DNA to do it. Ain't no way in the world you're going to tell me you ain't my brother. I wish you would try to tell me you and me ain't brothers. I know we are. You got melon. Melon came from one source, brother, the universe. And until we let that other guy go, you can have all this material things. Your spirituality footprint, if you leave that, you live forever. That's what our female, our better half is for. They wrote her out of the daggone Bible. It's a male-dominant book because they knew who she was. She is the mother of us all. She is the tree of life that they never talk about, which is in the midst of the garden. They hid her, took a lot of her knowledge out. But thank goodness our ancestors wrote it on the temples and tombs down there in the Valley of the Kings, and we started putting it together and doing our own interpretation of what they were saying. And man, our story is grand. It goes all the way through the far ends of the universe. Things that you never talked about because we stuck behind this limited guide today. We can, who said that? Jimi Hendrix said, when the love of power is overcome by the power of love, we'll be able to get home. We can get home tomorrow if we want to. Sort of like that movie, The Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man with no brains. That's supposed to be us. The lion with no courage, that's supposed to be us. And Dorothy could have went home. All she had to do was want to. Put it in her mind. She could have been went home. But that movie is a mockery of us. From Superman to man. And we need to start talking about unity. We need to start having symposiums and town hall, national town hall meetings on unity, so that we can learn how to treat each other and we can change our character and conduct toward ourselves and each other. Even in King James' book, Adam and Eve knew themselves and each other. That meant that they recognized and respected each other on the same level. And here we are today in a world where everything fights everything. That's funny. Everything fights. Everything is in competition. Everything is hustle and bustle. Whew. The computer was supposed to make our lives easier, and the computer made them greedier. That's when downsizing started. They cut the people at the top and put the work on the people at the bottom with the computer. And then corporate America start handing out bonuses, $14 million for being a CEO. And the economy was going bust. And they were stepping overseas. They got them sweatshops overseas. They run all that stuff over there. But we still have a chance with unity. All we got to do is go inward. We're supposed to be living inwardly, not living outwardly. You don't need the bling bling and the cars and the jewelry and the Cadillacs and your hair. You don't need none of that stuff. You're supposed to be living inwardly for your creator, the one that they pulled you from and made us forget. And all we got to do is hold on to our elders, and they'll show you the way back home. They'll show you a kingdom that you never thought you had. Riches beyond the universe. Beyond physical or material things. And our poor females, I'm going to tell you something, brother. They went through it. You think the brothers went through, we got tarred and feathered and got your testicles pulled off and everything like they do up here in Philly. But the women's were the real targets. I should say our females. They were the real targets because they're the mothers of us all. And they went through chaos. Look at them now. Look at our females today. They ready to fill them jails up because that's where we went. So now they done made more to get the females. Isn't it more it's more females than males today. That's why they building so many daggone prisons, because they got a lot of females to lock up. From the school board to the prison board. That's a big time industry. All because we won't sit down and listen to our hearts. All because we won't sit down and get for real. It was 13 of us, as I said earlier, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter what my mom and pop wanted. They told us to paint the whole house inside and out. We had fun doing it, and we did it in one day, inside and out. My mom loved to interior decorate, paint the ceilings, the halls, and we worked together. And, man, in one day, we were done. We back at the playground the next day, Chad. We had a ball doing that and had paint fight at the end. But these little things we got to do today, love one another, respect one another, honor one another, be for real to one another, we can't seem to do them no more. And it's in you, not on you. You can't buy it at the store. It's in you. If you know right from wrong, you're using part of it. But you won't use the rest of it because I'm watching the bling bling. I'm living outwardly on the TV. That's what we supposed to be doing, Brother Earl. That's our mission down here. We supposed to be building the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. That's what our ancestors were doing. That's why they lived the way they did. They did the things they did. Man, I heard one of our ancestors, he the one that made the Nile. He dug that thing out. I said, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, and yes, he did. He dug the Nile out and made it the Nile River. I said, wow. The Sphinx, which is really... The real name of the Sphinx is Harum Akit. Call him Harum Akit. And we don't even call it. We still call it the Sphinx. Because we ain't got our minds no more. We just sheep now, following the flock. And these preachers, now, I got a lot of them in my family. But they need to cut it out. They really need to cut it out. Because they got people on their knees waiting for somebody to come out the clouds when they the gods that the Creator made. We are the gods we waiting on. That's how powerful we are. If you go inside, you'll see it. The machinery is still working today. From the first day, the way the Creator made it in us is still working today. Every time you get ready to do something wrong, your cell phone in your heart rings. Who is it? It's the Creator. And what'd he say? Now you know what you're getting ready to do ain't right. What's the matter with you? Why you stop praying? Don't you know if you keep praying, you get to heaven too? He gives us a spiritual phone call. And because the school system said it was your conscience, we done tore it away from our spirituality concept. Now we think it's a conscience. Now it's not even connected to nothing. And so we act it out. We run around here ignoring our first line of defense, which is our direct lineage and line to the Creator. Then we fall into our lower self and we start acting like animals. And your spirit and your mental capacity goes off the chain and your emotions go up through the roof and then you act out what you was thinking about doing wrong. That's what happened.
I wonder if he's got any apologies for his children, though, that I wonder about.
Oh, I was...
Caller from the 267. Yes. I was just wondering, did you have any apology for your children?
No, because you got to have wrong. If you a god or a goddess, you can't be a God that knows all the good. You got to know good and bad. And bad is what really makes you good.
What about how much harder their lives are now?
their lies is not hard if you understand, if you all depends on your definition of lies. Just because we on the plantation, that don't mean, I mean, look, we didn't have nothing to start with. Can you imagine living like that? Where you had to catch your breakfast in the morning, take the ice water and thaw it out so you can cook and all this and chop down trees? Come on, man. Ain't nobody life hard. This ain't nothing. If we don't wake up, my kids' life ain't hard. They know me, and I know them. They're not even allowed to say can't in my house. Don't never say you can't.
And then why did you say I can't give my children a legacy? Why did you say you can't do that?
I didn't say that. I told them they wasn't allowed to say to use the word because of what it did to them.
Okay, well, they shouldn't say the word can't. You could.
Oh, I don't know about all that. I had seven sisters and six brothers, man. I don't think we said can't neither. Because if we did, they showed us how. It wasn't like that. I mean, sometimes you fall. Yeah, I fell. That's what made me where I'm at now. If I didn't fall, I don't think I'd have been as high as I am now.
Okay, what city are you in now?
This is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Philadelphia. Are you originally from there? Because it sounds like you have a certain accent.
No, I was born and raised here, but my folks is from where everybody else started from, down in Louisiana, New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm from Louisiana, too. I'm from Shreveport.
Everybody is, brother.
Okay,
that's where
here's
the slave
thing.
Trade built the towns.
Brother, I don't know if this is a prank call or not. I really don't. I hope this is a sincere call. I have to tell you. I want to thank you for your call tonight because your call has just demonstrated to everybody why Philadelphia and pretty much every other majority of big city in America is the hellhole that it is today.
I agree with you.
I want to thank you for calling in and illustrating to everybody exactly how Philadelphia ended up in the shape that it's in.
Well, it's one of their strongholds. As you know, they started from here, and this is the last place that this place. They will defend this place to their dying breath. No, you told me what you wanted to tell me,
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about you.
Well, you can judge me all you want. That don't matter because
judging things is the hallmark of a intelligent, sentient, higher being.
You watch them what they do and what they say. That's how you judge them, but you can't judge nobody. Me and you is brothers, and you judging me already. So therefore, I know what happened to you. You already judging me. I know what happened to you. You ain't got no heart. Look at you. You can't even scrape up, man.
I can't scrape up, says 64-year-old who didn't leave his children anything but a house.
What do you want me to leave them, Earl? What kind of assets, Earl?
Okay. First of all, my name is Jason Black. You can call me Black Authority. That's whichever one you prefer. Second thing is the north side. The north side of Philadelphia, sir, is as ugly as a tooth on a hound's ass.
Why are you getting angry?
Your city is a slum, and it's majority black.
That's right. All the cities are slums.
Okay, where is your business that started when you were 20 years old in 69? What were you doing in 69, subservient class in Philadelphia?
I was in the classroom. I was in science class learning at 29. Science class learning about the world that's a slum today, brother. That's where I was.
And what did you do after that when you left class? What did you do?
I found a rope and climbed my way out of that slum, and I educated myself, and I found spirituality, that told me that I don't need material things because everything down here we own anyway. I can get anything I want.
Get
a white dog or a black dog or a green dog. It don't matter.
Okay.
I don't want
without...
these materialistic things. You want those materialistic things, brother. And you
food is materialistic. Food is materialistic, you know.
Food? No, 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 no. Water, food, and shelter is not materialistic, son.
Yeah, they are.
No, that's why we have different kinds. Well, we can, you know, for the sake of your callers, we can argue about that on another time, you know.
There's an argument about food.
Because I will be calling you back again with some other elders. That can probably enlighten you on what you're trying to portray here.
I hope you call back. Please do. As a matter of fact, I've just had an idea. Would you like to be in my documentary?
No, not yours.
Brother,
because you would probably judge me like you already did.
We wrapped up filming my documentary back in September. But for this guy... I will tell you all right now, for this guy,
go ahead.
I will put it on hold. I'll call Don and Dr. Anderson and everybody else and tell them, I know I told y'all it was coming out in spring.
Claude Anderson?
Big just came
you
up.
You talking about Dr. Claude Anderson?
Madison Avenue. You know what? My mind, yes, bigger than that.
Yeah, I know Claude. I hung out with him. Claude and Mr. Battles and Mr. Robinson
back
and all them big timers, man.
And start filming all over again just to...
That's what we're going to eventually do.
Would you like to talk to us?
I don't know, brother. You going to be judgmental?
Yes.
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and stay in my stress-free, broken-down cabin and watch you people go ahead and strive for nothing. And I'll probably be doing a documentary on you.
Documentary.
And with that, brother,
documentary
I got to go tend
money,
my fire because I got to get up early in the morning to catch my fish for breakfast. I would invite you, but you might not like it.
Yeah, I
so
wouldn't
you have
like
a good day, son, and maybe one day we'll get back together again. Goodbye.
Well, that phone you're on is materialistic, by the way. That phone you're on is materialistic. I just thought I would point that out. Brothers and sisters from around the world, I'm sorry able to do that. I lying to people is not something that I do. Other people out there, like the stuff they're saying about me and whatnot, they lie. They do that every day. That's why they can't show you any proof. I lying to people is not one of my strong suits. I just can't do it. I just have to be straight with them. Caller from the 832, if this thing doesn't mess up, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First, brother.
Black First, brother, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Omekan Descendant calling from Houston.
Brother, what'd you think of the call?
Eye-opening and talk about delusional. You don't need materialistic items, okay? What did you think of the call?
I thought it explains why you and I are in the situation that we're in today.
Most definitely.
That call was just illustrative of why. You want to know what happened in the latter half of the 20th century? That was what happened. That call, that's what happened. Blood talk and mistakes notwithstanding, that call is what happened to you all legacy. Why you all have no birthrights. Why you have no assets. Because your parents did the same thing that he did. And your parents lied to you every day and tell you that they didn't. And they did.
I don't know what his... He kept, like, going back to this spirituality and if we know who we are, our hidden word, and this and this and this. White supremacy isn't worried about who you are spiritually. They're worried about power, possession, and control. And until we get on those same aspects and fiercely get on them, we're going to be at the bottom of the list.
What's the thing? He talked about being materialistic, but he's calling me on the phone. Talk about a house. And talking about I can get a black dog and a white dog. You can't get them free. But he wants to tell us that he's not worried about material things. Yes, he is. He's just not worried about them unless they're little. As long as they're small, as long as they're minor. All these old Negroes said that all they want to do is get on a poach somewhere and dip their little snuff and whittle away their last years. I'm telling you, these younger people, they've committed treason against you. They've committed treason because they have brought you. You don't have a choice whether or not you're in the world. Now you're here. And they've shoved you out there into the world with no protection, with nothing. It's just you against the world. And that's all. And now telling you it's okay for you to live a life of poverty. He sat here and said it. Being on the plantation ain't so bad. Define bad. So next time somebody wants to sit up here and tell you define power, define wealth, if you want to know where that kind of demand for semantics ends up, he just showed you. He just demonstrated for you where it ends up. That call was shameful. It was reprehensible.
Yeah, I had to cringe my way through it. But it's good that you were, you know, you let him speak to illustrate the depravity and the decay that the former civil rights generation really has and really had.
Those were their principles. What he just sat here and espoused to you, those were the principles that they lived and died by. Let me integrate this damn department store up here so I can buy snuff easier. Those were their principles. I know that's kind of hard for you to swallow. That's a little bit of a stiff drink. But it's time for you all to hear the truth. That's what they were fighting for. The right to buy their snuff and chew wherever they chose to. That was what it was all for. You, I would say you were an afterthought, but that would be lying. You weren't even an afterthought. Hell, most of you weren't even planned, but nobody wants to tell you that. Nobody except me, and when I say it, that's harsh. Did you hear the way that TBA spoke to his elders? Let me tell you something. Let me bring this microphone real close right now. I ain't got no elders who are traitors to their people and to their children. You think they heard me when I said that?
I think they did. And if they don't, they need to hear it when they replay the program. Traitors to the Black First Cause and Black Empowerment don't deserve respect. They don't deserve honor. They don't deserve love. They don't deserve anything because they are the reason we're in the predicament we're in now. I think you illustrated when you said if we had had a 300 moment in Tulsa, where would we be?
Could you imagine that guy being a part of a 300 moment?
No, he's a zip coon.
I mean, could you imagine if we would have ever left the plantations with somebody like him? Ever. Ever. He sat here and told us in no uncertain terms that, hey, plantations wasn't so bad. I mean, he literally sat here and said it. While other people are out there trying to talk to you all about getting some draws and basic female problems and child support issues and your kids are rampaging and all that simple stuff, I'm trying to explain to you and bring you a forum where you hear why your life is entrapped today. Because the enemy is not outside the front door. The enemy is right there on the couch with you. And I'm glad that he called in to illustrate that. I'm glad because he accomplished more in 10 minutes, even with me having to bounce back and forth. He accomplished more with a few. Last two callers we had, him and the guy yesterday.
Yeah.
That doesn't show you all why we're in the situation that we're in. Nothing in this world will. Nothing will. I really feel like I could shut this program down now, the whole broadcast, the whole Black Channel, and just weekly post their phone calls and just say, in case you missed it, this is why. I don't see how anybody else could come on here and get more plainly. One said, we don't need to identify Black. He can't see Black empowerment, so he can't see the future. And the other guy said, the past ain't so bad. Fella said, yesterday is okay. And the young fella said, the future ain't nothing to be worried about. And you wonder why we're here. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
I just want to say, Mr. Black, we appreciate what you do. And we appreciate the forum on Intelligent Black Thought. And we just got to keep going, you know, for those who are willing to take the road that we have to take. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough. But if we want to survive as a race and as a people and as a community, we're going to have to do the hard work because we're getting attacked on all fronts. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. I mean, he outright said the plantations weren't so bad. I don't know. I don't know how to make it any easier for you. I really don't. I really don't. Caller from the 480, you're on live Black Channel.
Hey, how's it going, Jason? This is Chris from Detroit. I live in Phoenix. Yeah, man, that call, the old man, that actually broke my heart, you know, to see that poison, I mean, has consumed him, and he's been afflicted by it his entire life, and his children have it, and they're doomed. If that's your leader, I'm in awe of that caller, that mind state. It's like, wow, this is real. You know, this isn't a hyperbole. This isn't, you know, fantasy. This is real life. People are truly happy in their weakened state, you know, and will justify it. I mean, and nothing he said can be measured. All of that stuff is just puff and smoke. And he keeps coming back. And he's going to die that way. That's crazy. 64 years old. All of this, I mean, just saw America completely transformed and was fine on the sidelines. Crazy. And the problem is that he represents the majority. That way of thinking is the majority. My grandparents, and I love them to death, they didn't leave my mother anything, my father anything. My parents didn't leave me anything. And I'm trying to break that cycle. I don't think it's fair just to leave your children insurance money. You know, that's terrible. But I just had to chime in, man. I enjoy what you're doing. And I've tuned in yesterday, and I heard the other guy who couldn't even see a Black utopia. And really didn't even want it. I'm amazed, you know, how white supremacy is just all encompassing, and it's just.
And well, people say I exaggerate. People would tell you that I exaggerate. That is just me talking, and that these people only feel that way and whatever. They would tell you that these people are not actually out there, and I'm exaggerating, and I'm being harsh, and it's not really black and white, and you're being too difficult on people. I'm sitting here playing the phone calls. I'd like for some of those people who think I'm too harsh to be difficult to call in now and explain to me that we're still too harsh, too difficult. I'd like them to call in.
And even my man,
the fella from New York, I mean, we had both of them call in. And people need to understand, this isn't a joke. This isn't a game. We're leaving nothing to our children. We're leaving our children helpless and hopeless. And he's just saying, damn that, you know, he's looking for his pie in the sky and his heaven in the hereafter. Philadelphia is a slum. And for those of you who have not been there, I've been there. I will show you a video. Philadelphia is a dirty and filthy slum is a slum. And where black folk live is squalor.
But Jason, that's true on Earth. Like, we don't have nothing that's decent. And the crazy part is that people are not willing to do what it takes to change it. Detroit, Zimbabwe, Atlanta, all of it is a wasteland. And we just sit and we live and we accept it. That's why what you said a while ago, every slave is responsible for his captivity. That couldn't be true. Because you don't have to live this way. You could choose death. It's crazy, man. But Jason, what you're doing is powerful. And you're right. I don't think you have to broadcast anymore. You made your point in 48 hours.
I just put these broadcasts. I may keep broadcasting, just replay two broadcasts forever and just, I don't know. I don't know how I top that. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Last word is black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. I don't see what more I could say that they didn't already say. I don't see how I improve on that. I can keep talking, but I don't see what more information I give you that those two calls didn't give you all together. You want to know why we're in the condition we're in? That's why. Caller from the 702 on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, caller from 702, you're on live.
Yes, Jason, this is Devontae Douglas from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Well, first, brother, what's on your mind?
Not too much. I just chimed in. I missed the gentleman that was before, the younger gentleman that was speaking about him, talking about plantations weren't so bad. I didn't actually get to hear him say that. I didn't actually get to hear what he said. I was actually just getting off of work and just called as soon as I walked out the door.
Well, the gentleman was 64 years old, and I asked, he went talking about, you know, we all know the reasons why we're in this condition we're in and XYZ, and I said, sir, you're 64 years old, you're in Philadelphia. Will you please explain to me what you've left for your children to build with? To which he then responded, he left them spiritual DNA. I'm quoting. He said, I left them spiritual DNA.
But that's something you're born with.
Well, no.
You didn't leave anybody anything.
So what he's saying is that he left them, that his DNA is special. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, that's delusional.
You know, when the pharaohs and the Caesars said that, we all laughed. This guy says it and we're supposed to take it seriously.
Yeah, not really. No, he's delusional. I hate to say that about
him. He went on to say after that bad was a relative thing, basically. That bad is relative and that man it could be a lot worse and even the plantations weren't so bad that, you know, I mean, he's like, this is nothing compared to what it could be. So what he's saying is, yeah. I didn't have to do anything to my children because it could be worse. I don't have to leave my children with better. That's his
so
escape hatch.
What he's saying is, he'll take a second degree burn over a third degree burn. They may kill you, but the second degree burn is still going to hurt.
It's different than that, though. What he's saying is that I left my daughter to live with an uncle who was raping her. But
wow.
it could be worse. The uncle and his I could have left her with my best friend, and him and his neighbor would have been raping her. So you see, it could have been worse. Don't you understand?
Yeah,
it can always be worse.
That is true. Yeah, it could always be a whole lot worse, but it's not about surviving.
Why don't you go get your daughter and get her the hell away from your brother? Why don't you go do that? Because all you're really doing is giving us an excuse for why you left her there in that condition. You could do better. There's no excuse behind saying it could be worse. It could be worse is not an excuse. What do you do to make it better? And he doesn't have anything to say to that. And he's not the only one.
No, he's not.
Far from it.
I can't believe what I'm hearing here, but, I mean, I see it every day. Like I said, I live in Las Vegas, and it's scary. You'll find one out of 100 people that are similar to me in the sense that, you know, you do your own thing and you try to be responsible and you try to take care of business. Don't get me wrong. I haven't built anything, so I'm not trying to take credit for that at all. I have not built anything. So, but you at least try to make your, you know, family and friends understand that there is something better than this. You can strive to thrive instead of striving to just survive. We survived this long. We have survived this long. That is what it is. But it's time for us to try to thrive and do more and be more. But, I mean, some people don't look at it that way. Some people think survival is it. Survival is great. I mean, you get some sneakers, a cell phone, and you get a job. And that's where the buck stops. And I don't think so. I mean, I know we all weren't trained, you know, properly, and we ought to get all the greatest gifts in the world, but we could change that. And we could pass what we get, what we make, on to our children. I don't know if everybody's going to wake up, but, I mean, hopefully enough of us do.
Well, those of us who are sick of it and tired of it and ready to do something different, yes. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Y'all know always, Jason. You have a great evening.
Thank you very much for joining us. If the head is sick, then it doesn't even matter how well the rest of the body is. Do you know that? If the head of something is diseased, deformed, misshapen, in disorder, then it doesn't matter how healthy the rest of you is. It doesn't matter if everything from the neck down is like Usain Bolt. It doesn't matter. If you are crazy and deranged, it doesn't matter how healthy the rest of the body is. And too many people are not getting that. Take another call here. Caller from the 718, you're live with the Black Channel.
Good evening, Jason. This is Ozame Baha, a.k.a. Nurzo Big Zo, calling from New York City.
Black First Brother, do you hear what's going on this phone tonight?
I'm trying not to curse and get mad and to tear the remaining hair on my head out. Between the ineptitude, the stupidity, as well as the treasonous thoughts both on tonight's broadcast and yesterday's broadcast, I'm speechless.
Brother, he sat here and said in no uncertain terms that I didn't have to leave my children anything. I left them my spiritual DNA. And he's proud of himself.
I don't want to say it because it would sound very crass and rude, and that's not what we do here on this broadcast. But unfortunately, the thinning of the herd is way overdue. He got missed. He won't miss the second time around.
Could you imagine? I mean, he's not in Louisiana. Maybe you could see differently if he was off some rural area in Mississippi or Louisiana or something. Maybe we could cut him a little slack and just say, okay, he's a country Negro. He was born and raised in Philadelphia. And does that give you some idea that this Negro was born in Philadelphia and yet he turned out exactly the way they do in rural Louisiana? Do you know what that says about Philadelphia when black people are no more ambitious or upwardly mobile than they are in rural Louisiana?
The problem is, and Umar Johnson stated it very well in one of his lectures, the thing is this, they have intentionally, within the public school system, pulled out anything worthwhile, especially where it concerns the trades, and they've intentionally defunded the so-called public schools where people of color are located in general, and relocated the funds to the funds and the resources out to where the non-people of color are. And they've done that. It's part of a general overall long-term scheme to slowly justify a genocide. And you know the sad part is? A lot of people across the nation have fallen in hook, line, and sinker.
They want to. They want to be like him. Understand something. He's 64 years old. Give him his Nikes, give him his blunt, and call it a day. He's not trying to have anything more than that. Do you know how hard it would be? He lacks ambition. Zoe, how do we give a grown-ass man ambition? How do we do that?
You either pull a you basically point two guns at him. You said you're going to lose one of two heads. Decide which one is more important to you. You only got 5 seconds. Four of them are already gone. Let's go. That's how
he
you
back
make
here and said that he didn't have to leave his children anything. That material things are overrated. While he's talking about, well, he's talking to me on his telephone.
He reminds me of that young man you were speaking to yesterday that said the same thing. I wanted to jump through the phone and choke him. But the problem is they've been brainwashed. They've been betrayed by the church. They've been betrayed by what pathetically goes for as a community activist. And they've been miseducated by those they've been entrusted to by their parents. And the problem is that you cannot trust the people that have, on many different aspects, declared themselves to be your enemy, to do right by you, to take care of you, to educate you, and to look out for you. It doesn't work like that. But the problem is that in America, too many people are not taught that there's something beyond your block, something beyond your city, beyond your state, beyond your country. Because if they were able to lift up their eyes and look, they'd actually see a world where things are not the way they are here. And they might start to get a little bit of vision. They might start to say, wait a minute, I've been lied to. Wait a minute, there's more than just the squalor that I'm living in. But I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not nearly quite as stunned as the rest of you because I'm older, jaded, and cynical. But I went to Philadelphia, brother, and it crumbled all over the place. That Walmart at Adams, Roosevelt, and the people in Philadelphia know where the hell I'm talking about. That Walmart in the shopping center where the Home Depot and Office Depot and that Dollar General store on the not Dollar General, I want to say it's like everyone's a dollar or something like that. That there's a reason why that Wendy's that they had out there, I was figuring, okay, how bad could that be? I'll feed the crew some of this stuff here. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, I thought they renovated all the Wendy's across America. Missed one.
Wow.
The one on Adams, they missed that one. As a matter of fact, it looked like that was the first one that was built. I was like, are you serious? Are you serious? You go to Walmart and they get buckets on the floor to catch the water coming in from the ceiling.
No.
Okay, but here's the kicker. It was raining outside.
God, no.
So that doesn't tell you when a major retailer like Walmart says, we're concerned about many of our stores, just not that one.
Wow.
What the hell does that tell you? As black people not giving a damn? Brother, the Arabs and the Indians run all the hotels. I know, I've been there. They run all the hotels in black neighborhoods. All of them, not some. All of them. Go to Chinatown and go see who runs them.
Yeah, you're right.
You tell me how many black folk run anything in Chinatown. Then you go to black neighborhoods and there's nothing but Asians and Arabs running the joints. What the hell does that tell you? In their neighborhoods, you ain't going to tell them how they're going to live in their neighborhoods. They're coming into yours to tell you if you will live, not how, if you're going to live. And it made me sick. It made me want to start retching right there. It was ridiculous. Went downtown, found all the white folk. All the expensive real estate. Yep, found all the white folk here. Plymouth Meeting. Found the white folk. Horsham. Yep, there are. I can start name dropping. I'm not going to do that. For those of you who live in Philadelphia, you know I'm telling the damn truth. You know I'm telling the damn truth. The first full... What was I doing up there, Horsham? Because that was the only place that had a real Walmart with a real grocery store in it. Well, I just keep on the Walmart. It's the only thing I can recognize. I mean, I look, Giant and all that stuff. I'm sure they're wonderful people. I'm sure they are. Yeah, I'm not going to just do a bunch of shopping around. Where's the damn Walmart? It was the only one. And then I realized this is how far you have to go to get to a Walmart supercenter that actually has a full grocery store in it. You know, with produce stuff.
Yeah.
First one you could get to. That was it. You had to drive, and that's like another 30 minutes. You had to drive all that damn way. We had to basically leave outside of Philadelphia, suburb. They built fully stocked Walmart in the suburb. They ain't doing it in Philadelphia. Telling you with that. I'm trying to get people to see what are they telling you.
But they're telling us so
is that you are all you got. Because we ain't going to do this for you. And with the elders saying that we have sided white supremacy against the children. We gave birth to these children in order to sacrifice them on the altar of white supremacy. You shall be gobbled up by the beast now. That's why we had you. And that's why I call it treason. You didn't even have children so you could devour them yourselves. You had them so that you could offer them to somebody else. That's treason, Zoe. That's a high crime against your children. Hear and say the plantations weren't so bad. If that's not siding with white supremacy, what in the hell is? Now, he doesn't have any white folk behind him beating him and smacking him now? What, you going to say that he was oppressed under segregation? Well, where are they beating him and smacking on him now? He's still saying the same thing, and nobody is standing over him making him say it. He believes it. But guess what? He's believed it his whole life. He has been desirous to bow down his whole life. And now, here he is, telling you and me how cool bowing down is. I wonder why we're in the state we're in today. Nobody can explain to me why in the hell I have to drive all over the damn place in Philadelphia. Brother, Philadelphia is a majority black city. I mean, they're 49% of the population, but they are the largest ethnic group. Black folks should be running that damn thing up one side and down the other. Ought to be prosperous, ought to be living high. And yet black people are the lowest living people in the city of Philadelphia, bar none. And I drove all over that damn thing. That's why I can tell you that at that scene where Mark Wahlberg was driving down Broad Street in Sniper and Shooter, ain't no damn way you can make that happen. He's driving down Broad Street at 100 miles an hour. Let me tell you, even if I was literally on the run for law, what is that, Broad Street, Front Street, literally a front street in Philadelphia, long too. No way in the hell he could do that. No way in the hell, I'm telling you. I'm going to show it to you so you all can see it for yourselves. Because nobody else wants to talk about this. Nobody else can. There's nobody else out there broadcasting who's trying to tell you what's going on in those places where you are. I talked about New York, and you know every damn word I said was the truth. Everything. And he just showed you how you all got there. Because Harlem is full of a bunch of old, elderly Negroes who offer you all up as sacrifice to the beast, too. Tell me that I'm telling a tale on them.
When the opportunity came for ownership, there were very few that saw the vision. I know a few that actually bought brownstones, and now they're wealthy. But they are few and far between. Everybody else has stayed renting or just moved out. Now, it's a developer's paradise. It's a working person's or a poor person's nightmare. Do no fault but their own.
Brother, I can't tell you how many areas in Philadelphia that I saw where you could set off the same economic bombs that they're setting off in New York right now. Those of you who are new to the Haven of Intelligent Black Thought, this is the Black Channel Dot Radio. And I've coined a new term, economic bomb. Other people will begin to use it. You heard it here first on the Black Channel that they're setting off economic bombs in New York. And do I mean by economic bombs? If you are in a poor area like Harlem and you own nothing and you control nothing and you have nothing and you live in old dilapidated houses and you built nothing, you control nothing, and your children sold all the land everywhere else because you taught them that it wasn't valuable and it wasn't worth anything because you can give them a legacy. And then the real estate developers show up. Then they show up and they start taking over. And all they have to do to take out everybody in a 3-block radius, all they have to do is build one condominium for $1 million, $2 million, it doesn't matter. That one condominium is an economic bomb with a blast yield of 3 blocks. Because everything within 3 blocks of that condominium in all directions is going to skyrocket in value. And if you are renting, the rents are about to go up. And even if you own, the property value just went up. So guess what just happened? The taxes for where you live just went up too. It's an economic bomb. Destroy every black person within 3 square blocks. In some places, it could be up to 10 blocks. Depending on how valuable what they built is, it could be up 10 blocks. That's a bomb. That's a weapon of mass destruction. We all thought they had to pull another Bull Connor. No, they don't. American ethnic cleansing is the thing most sophisticated on the face of the planet. And the great thing about it is it leaves no dead bodies, at least not at the beginning. At least not at the beginning, it doesn't. Zoe, is there anything that I just described that was wrong or factually inaccurate? If there is, call me on it right now.
Honestly, no. The one thing that I have to say is this. It's like Chris Rock once said famously in one skit. It's been a slept-on skit during one of his comedy shows, but it was one of the most powerful. Right now, there's a civil war going on in our community. There are black people, and the must got to go. You already know by the pause, you already know what the word is. You can put it in there. I don't want to lower the content of the broadcast by putting it in there.
Oh, trust me, you couldn't do any worse than Pops did, believe me. Brother, you would have to think long and hard and contemplate in the dark, deep hours of the morning to outdo him. So, no, I wouldn't worry about that.
Because the biggest problem that we're having is this. People are not thinking about what has been done to them. They're not realizing they are not only victims, but they're not only taking the power that they have within and within reaching out and working with their own brothers and sisters to change things. Because the only way you're going to make things better is you have to force things to become better. The passive resistance is not going to work. And this whole aspect of we are the world, kumbaya, it's ludicrous.
The old man who called today and the young man who called yesterday are flip sides of the exact same coin. They both have a kumbaya attitude. There was nothing black empowerment about that old man that called in today. Hell, there's nothing personal empowerment. Don't you understand, Zoe? When I say empowerment, when I say black empowerment, I really mean personal empowerment. Now, you get that, and a few other people do. Empowering yourself is what empowers all of us. The guy has lived and is in the last trimester of his life, and will someone please tell me what purpose was he born for? You can figure it out. You're pretty good.
I could honestly tell you the only purpose that he was born for and those of his ilk is a cautionary tale of how not to live your life and how not to be. Otherwise, he's a pathetic waste of sperm.
Well, he did do another thing. He worked. He worked for those people. He worked diligently and feverishly every day for them. That's what he did. Do you know that here's the crazy thing about people who leave no legacy for their children? And I want to wrap up tonight's broadcast by saying this. Don't you know when you work your whole life for companies and yet you leave nothing for your children, don't you know that you have done more for those people at that company than you've done for your own kids? He has been more of a benefit to the white companies he worked for than to the children he gave birth to. If that's treason, Zoe, there is no definition. When you have done more to benefit the dominant economic culture than you have to your own kids, please tell me for what did you live? Please tell me how that's not treason against your children.
I cannot tell you anything to the contrary.
I'll let you have the last word, brother.
The last word is simple. My brothers and my sisters, the time has come to simply do this. Shake off the wretchedness from among you. Look within yourself and really take inventory about what you are about, what your life purpose is, and don't settle for nothing less than the best. If you have never taken the time to really, really, really examine yourself, start from this moment on and make every day count, because you never know when your last breath is coming upon you and when you'll never be able to open your eyes once again. If you see someone in need that is willing to help themselves, stick your hand out. But if you see someone that is a detriment to the cause, walk past them. Because guess what? We have no time to waste on those that are not willing to better themselves. Because if you try to help the one that's drowning, but they're not even trying to make an effort to help themselves, they will cause your own downfall. And we cannot lose one able-bodied, mentally stable, and capable person as we're in this fight for our lives. Black First.
Black First, bro, thank you very much for joining us. At the beginning of the broadcast, I wanted to deal with a very, very simple concept. Why is it okay to be angry? And that call from the old man from Philadelphia, if you want to know why I'm as stark as I am, you want to know why I'm as black and white as I am, if you want to know why everything is as crucial to me as it is, if you want to know why I tell you that we have no room to compromise, go back and listen to that call. Hear it in black and white for yourselves. And if you're not angry when you finish hearing that call and thinking about his children, if you're not mad as hell after you hear that call and thinking about how heartless and selfish he is in regard to his own children, if you aren't calling it black and white right down the middle after hearing something like that, understand something, the problem's not just with him. The problem is with you, too. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your mad-as-hell humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future, as always, is uncompromising.